The most banned man in America, Alex Jones.
I want you all to know something. Alex Jones was right.
Alex is right about far more than he's wrong.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
I don't care how you slice it, dice it, flip it up, or rub it down. Alex Jones was right.
Think about how frustrated we are if you've been awake for a year or two. Imagine being like an Alex Jones or those guys who've been awake for like decades.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Alex Jones never bought the Russia hoax, not for a second.
You are one of the great thinkers of this.
You are a martyr to the First Amendment.
The government fears Alex Jones.
That's why the globalists hate me, is because I'm exposing their corporate worldwide tyranny.
Putting the nitrous oxide into the NASCARs. Fire shooting out of them tailpipes. We're going from 1,500 horsepower to 2,500. Boom! Gonna break the sound barrier. And if you think having the biggest show ever in English-speaking media, which I had for at least 3 years, was big, nothing is gonna stop everything that's coming. It's like atomic testing, waking up Godzilla. That's what they've done. That which does not kill me only makes me stronger. So, I'm Godzilla, and your ass is Tokyo. Politically, lovingly, non-violently.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here. And you can watch The Alex Jones Show live on these platforms. On X at Real Alex Jones. And on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Or go to the website, alexjoneslive.com. And don't forget to download the number one news app in the world on Apple and Android. AlexJonesApp.com. Share the links now and tell everyone Alex Jones is back and he's not f***ing leaving.
This is an emergency transmission from FEMA Region 6 in occupied North America.
They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds, hear the broadcast, share the signal at alexjoneslive.com.
alexjoneslive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. alexjoneslive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on alexjoneslive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight. Alex Jones is back. The InfoWar continues at AlexJonesLive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, AlexJonesApp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95-plus percent lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of TheAlexJonesShow.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon, the 13th of July, 2026. Absolutely massive show we have for you today. I have no idea how I'm going to fit everything from this weekend into today's show. We have more developments about the Iran war, and yes, it's the same thing as ever, but even more so this time. And of course, the passing, the ascension into heaven of one Senator Lindsey Graham. I gotta be honest, it wasn't until about 30 seconds ago and I heard the music going, we're about to go live, that I realized I haven't given a single instance of thought as to how I'm actually going to cover Lindsey Graham passing away. Normally, I would have some sort of strategy coming into this. What exactly I'm going to say, how I'm going to deliver what I think in a way that gets the message across and doesn't offend. I just haven't even thought about it. Haven't even considered it once. I'll say this. I just, as a matter of principle, you gotta have principles, folks. I'll never celebrate the death of another living human being, especially not another, you know, fellow American like Lindsey Graham. All I can say is that the instant I learned that he was dead, I felt a profound sense of relief. I'm not saying that I wanted the guy dead. It's kind of like if you're driving in the car and you don't even really notice it, but there's like a styrofoam container squeaking. And it's just this like, nee, 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 nee. But then the moment it stops, you're like, oh my God, well, I didn't even realize like that was going on in the background. It's like there was just this constant, persistent threat that at any moment, on any day, Lindsey Graham might make a public statement and I would have to respond to it. And that threat just no longer exists. It's just not out there anymore. And it's just like you wake up and you step outside and what previously you're used to just like construction noises and horns honking and people yelling at each other and such, just like birds chirping. And you're just like, oh, the world is returning. Nature is flourishing. We're back. So that's how I felt about it. I don't know about you, but that's how I felt about it. Lindsey Graham, long-serving senator from South Carolina, has passed away from what? I guess that's still up for debate. Also, was Mitch McConnell a sleight of hand distraction from us? Like, this is so bizarre. We have apparently proof of life from Mitch McConnell, although people have questions about the photos he's posting, but he is literally posting pictures holding today's newspaper, like the joke I made last week about telling if he's alive. So apparently Mitch McConnell's alive, but Lindsey Graham is dead. But Lindsey Graham is dead. An interesting development in all of this is the fact that, and you know, maybe I'm a little bit biased here, we're a long ways out from the original instance, but I have a distinct memory of President Donald J. Trump having a hard time mustering that much grief when his surrogate son, best friend Charlie Kirk, died. Weirdly, I genuinely feel like there's more emotion and I hear more of a tremble in Donald Trump's voice eulogizing Lindsey freaking Graham than I ever heard from Charlie Kirk. And I find this a little bit disturbing, considering the fact that we, maybe not so much anymore, but for a long time, wrote off so much of what Trump did or said as, you know, purely political. Well, you can't read into that. That's not how he actually feels, but he's got to play the game a little bit, and we all give him a little bit of leeway or grace for that. But there's something very disturbing about Donald Trump's lack of grief with Charlie Kirk, especially compared to his seemingly very real and sincere grief when warmonger-in-chief Lindsey Graham shows up dead. Let's go to clip number 32 here. This is Trump commenting on the death of Lindsey Graham.
Around the time, it couldn't have been much longer. It could have been his last call. I don't know exactly, but I got a message about 1 o'clock in the morning from one of the people at his office that he had passed away. I said, "You got it. I just can't believe it." He was like a member of the family to me. It's very tough, actually. It's amazing,
Mr. President.
He was such an advocate. He was, you know, if he wanted to get something, and you know, he had a unique ability. He was able to deal with Democrats and Republicans. If I had a problem, a real problem, I wouldn't often ask. But if I had a problem with a Democrat, he could work it out. He was a great politician, actually.
Well, he was a great politician. You could say that. We'll get back to Lindsey Graham in just a little bit, but obviously that was probably one of, if not the biggest story over the weekend. The questions about how he died, you know, we'll try to get to the bottom of, but we'll touch on that in just a little bit, in just a little while. Meanwhile, we have a lot of other news and videos to get to, including, I genuinely don't even know where to begin. What I've noticed to an even, you know, increasing degree, despite the fact that this has been a persistent issue for all of Trump's second administration, but for some reason this weekend really jumped out at me as I'm scrolling through, you know, 'cause the weekend, I've got all these bookmarks saved, I've got all these stories and videos, and I'm going through determining what I should actually present. And as I'm going through it, there are basically two sort of parallel stories going on. One is the story of the statistical intangible collapse of America, and the other is everything America is doing for Israel. And again, I know, you know, not to beat a dead horse, that I've literally been talking about this since February 2025, when everything Donald Trump was doing was like, I like it, it's good. It's just, why is Israel getting so much attention? Why are we focusing on that a little bit? And shouldn't we prioritize American concerns? And that little hint of discomfort and worry has now grown and developed into a full-on fury, an obsession, you might say, of noticing, an obsession of noticing this stuff, because I'm not going out and looking for it, but it's absolutely everywhere. And I'm not kidding. It is kind of, it's really baffling. When you notice this dichotomy, when you actually see this, it becomes impossible to ignore. But story after story after story about major corporations laying off thousands of American workers in favor of H-1B visa hires, or the fact that as of today, home prices have reached their highest, most unachievable level of all time. House prices today are more out of reach for the average American than they've ever been before in all of history. And so whether it's the unemployment, the offshoring of our jobs, the growth of DSA, and the absurdities and exploitation of socialism, it's just like story after story after story. Now, in a world that made even just a little bit of sense, when you have the story about how the left side of the aisle is destroying America, or how about America, the American people are being disadvantaged in some way, on the other side, the flip side of that coin would be that you have the Republicans in Congress desperately trying to do something about all of these problems, but you don't actually have that. You never have that. What you have is things like Marco Rubio deciding to declare war against the International Criminal Court because they noticed the genocide Israel is carrying out and felt like doing their jobs and issuing a ruling on that matter. And once again, this is like the best example. You can't possibly make an argument that this has anything to do with the American. It just does not have anything to do with the American people. It couldn't possibly. And there's no argument that it does. why is this what we're doing? Why is going after the International Criminal Court the thing that we're prioritizing when you have an endless series of headlines about how every single part of America is getting significantly worse at an ever-increasing rate, and yet all of our effort, all of everything I have from the United States government over this weekend is like, we're back at war with Iran. We're going to go to war with the ICC over the, you know, in The Hague over there trying to inject some semblance of humanity into the proceedings. You've got the bill to merge America and Israel moving ahead at a pace. So while America, the country, the nation, the people are collapsing into poverty and discrimination and violence, the American government is desperately trying to get the most advantage for Israel they possibly can. So let's just go through some political headlines, shall we? Fury erupts as Microsoft division fires 1,600 after thousands of foreign worker visas approved. A popular U.S.-based gaming brand owned by Microsoft is facing fury after mass employee layoffs occurred in the wake of the company being approved for thousands of foreign worker visas. Microsoft announced it will lay off 4,800 people total and 1,600 from the corporation's Xbox division, which makes and sells the dominant video game console. Meanwhile, Microsoft has been approved this year to hire from foreign countries 2,273 employer-sponsored non-immigrant workers under what is known as the H-1B visa program, according to data from the U.S. Citizens Immigration Services. So, you know, I frankly am just tired of, like, reporting on stories like this, which cannot possibly have any excuse other than just the deliberate selling out of America. Again, no argument for it, no way to frame this. Because this is treated as if this is like some sort of problem we have to solve, we have to come up with a solution for it. No, it's just people screwing us over. We just have to stop it. You just have to not have the H-1B program. It's just a scam. Again, this is sort of the frustration with all of this awareness all of a sudden about all the fraud that's taking place. All of it is fraud. All of it is fraud. I get a little spasm every time I read the words adult daycare. I just kind of like twitch a little bit. You know, like, what is adult daycare, and why are we paying $20 billion for Somalis to provide it to other Somalis? Well, what does that mean? What is adult daycare? That's not a thing, but it is costing us $30 billion or something ridiculous. The whole thing is a scam. It's all fraud. It shouldn't exist, but it does. So kind of like I've said before about just like reading every day, it's like, well, the serial killer killed more people and we'll just report on it. His name's Jeff. He lives down the road. He's always covered in blood, but like we just aren't doing anything about it. It's kind of similar to that. It's just like, oh, imagine working in a place and just every day you have to report to your boss like, hey, you know, our coworker, Sarah, yeah, I saw her again taking wads of cash out of the cash register again. And they're just like, oh, what do we do? What are we going to do about this? How are we going to do? Okay. All right. Thanks for telling us. We'll get back to you. And then just nothing happens. And the next day you see Sarah shoveling wads of cash and you're just like, I guess I'll report this again. Nobody's doing anything to stop it. It's not like this is, we're just being robbed. Okay. So let's just report on how we're being robbed and never doing anything about it. It's crazy. But here's where you take the insanity of just the fact that any of these programs exist. They can only ever possibly only thing they do. The only thing they're set up to do is to take jobs from the American people. That's the point. There's no other thing they could do. And then you look at who is the woman responsible for firing thousands of people and hiring thousands of her own co-ethnics. And the story gets so much crazier. A resume deep dive on Asha Sharma, architect of the layoffs for 3,200 Americans at Microsoft. This is from Jobs Now on X at Jobs Now PR. She was the VP at Facebook during their $14 million settlement for the DOJ for discriminating against Americans. She was then the COO at Instacart, who threatened to sue Jobs Now for exposing their blatant anti-American discriminatory job advertising. She's now the CEO of Microsoft Gaming, parent company of Blizzard, which was running ads following the same discriminatory playbook Facebook was sued for as recently as January 2026. Have we actually found the woman who's bringing hidden perm job discrimination across big tech? Yeah, I guess so, but she's now been hired by the Federal Reserve to be the head of a committee about hiring in America. I don't even know if you can call this failing up. I don't think she failed. I think this is what she's there to do. Fire Americans, hire Indians, job well done. Does the profitability go up? No. Do the products get better? Absolutely not. Quite the opposite. Everything gets significantly worse, but she gets promoted. The stock prices go up. More Americans go on welfare, and the cycle continues. I'll just keep reporting on this. I'm going to try to stop getting so frustrated because it's just the same thing over and over again. The same person keeps walking up to us, smiling in our face and kicking us in the shins. And for some reason, we cannot learn this lesson. We don't just stop him from doing it. We sit there and wonder why our shins hurt. It's crazy. It's crazy. Bipartisan housing bill becomes law despite Trump's refusal to sign it. President Trump said he would refuse to sign a housing bill without passage of voting legislation, but without veto, it will still become law. A major housing bill has automatically become law without Donald Trump's signature after the president said he would refuse to sign the legislation because Congress has not approved new restrictions on voting nationwide. The measure, known as 21st Century Road to Housing Act, is the biggest change to federal policy for buyers, renters, and home builders in decades, and Congress approved it with large margins last month after lengthy negotiations between Democrats and Republicans, but Trump tied the bill to the Save America Act, which would impose a host of new restrictions on voters and state election officials nationwide ahead of November's midterm elections, in which Republicans will be defending their majorities in the Senate and House of Representatives. A version of the Save America Act passed the House in February, but is opposed by Senate Democrats and lacks the vote in that chamber to overcome the filibuster. So last month, Trump canceled a signing ceremony for the housing bill, denying his Republican allies an opportunity to publicly highlight their efforts to address housing affordability, which surveys indicate is a top concern amongst voters. But we saw literally last week there was a giant comprehensive nationwide economic study that shows that the vast majority of the rise in house prices is attributable directly to the rise in population from the immigration that's happened. So that's the solution. When massive immigration causes the house prices to go up, if you're trying to lower house prices, you need to deport those immigrants. It is not complicated. What we don't need is a giant housing bill to get government subsidies to pay for Section 8 housing in, you know, fancy neighborhoods so we can actually provide housing to the very immigrants who are driving up the house pricing. This is all nonsense and absurd. And Section 8 housing and the things featured in this housing bill are in their own right directly responsible for the rise of house prices overall, because it's literally just subsidizing house prices. Like, it's just subsidizing the amount people can pay. So where landlords might otherwise have to lower rent in order to get customers, they can just charge whatever they want and pass the expenses off to the government. So what are we doing? So what are we doing here? After laying off 3,200 employees, Xbox CEO joins the Fed's jobs task force. Just 3 days after this woman, Sharma, cut 3,200 Microsoft gaming jobs, the Fed named her as co-lead of its AI and employment policy task force. I think they're sending us a message, folks. I think this was a message directly to us, because for several days, people had been commenting angrily about how this Indian woman very clearly just jumps from CEO executive big tech job to big tech executive job. And everywhere she goes, she fires thousands of Americans, hires thousands of Indians, and then just moves on to the next place. For days and days, people have been talking about this, complaining about this, pointing out that this was a systematic dismantling and wholesale exploitation of our entire economic system. And only after days of talking about this did the Fed come out and decide to say, oh, that woman that you're all complaining is just clearly an enemy agent selling out your birthright and destroying you economically. We're putting her on the board of AI and productivity development moving forward. So that's when they spit on you after leaving you for dead, right? It's like they've already destroyed us. Now they're just rubbing salt in the wound. 3 days after announcing the mass layoff in the video game, the largest mass layoff in the video game industry this year, Xbox CEO Asha Sharma got a new title, co-lead of the Federal Reserve's Task Force on Productivity and Jobs. Sharma announced 3,200 job cuts across Microsoft Gaming Division on July 6th, 2026. The Fed named her for the task force on July 9th. She is the only sitting CEO named to any of the Fed's five new external task force and will help shape how the central bank thinks about artificial intelligence and employment for the next decade. So don't worry, folks, if you thought the backlash to wokeness would result in some mitigation or moderation of the violent anti-white hiring practices of big corporations, not if the Fed has anything to say about it. Not if the money printers have their way. They're very clear about what they desire. Then you've got stuff like this. And we reported on this a little bit before when the new mayor of Seattle made a similar statement, but it's now being confirmed officially. Washington state officials declined to investigate empty daycares for potential fraud. Washington state officials are refusing to investigate daycare providers that reportedly receive hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxpayer subsidies after reporters found little evidence that children were being cared for at some of their locations. According to a report from the Center Square, over the past 6 months, its reporters visited roughly 36 daycare providers that had received large state and federal subsidy payments intended to support childcare for lower-income families, but only a small number appeared to have children present. And basically, state officials have resisted calls for a broader crackdown. Attorney General Nick Brown previously demonized the journalists for investigating the allegations, saying in December, showing up on someone's porch, threatening or harassing them isn't an investigation, neither is filming minors who may be in the home. This is unsafe and potentially dangerous behavior. And so, yeah, you've got $37 million of questionable child care subsidy payments made through DCYF using federal funds. The audit found weaknesses in prepayment controls, though it did not confirm fraud because it didn't investigate fraud. And like I said, the mayor of Seattle openly said, we will not be investigating, you know, daycare fraud, which, call me crazy, I might move to Washington State and open up a daycare. I mean, you're telling me that you can receive hundreds of thousands of dollars from the federal government, and when reports of fraud through this system are reported, the government's response is to say, how dare you? We will not be investigating that fraud. That it doesn't matter how many millions are stolen. It doesn't matter how obviously fraudulent the application is. We will continue to deliver pallets of cash to these criminals. Like, okay, you got to do it then. I got it. We got to do it. You're an idiot if you're not bilking this system for all the money you're worth or all the money they're worth. Like, this is genuinely, like, yeah, okay, I would make a dig. If I lived in Washington State today, I'd be using AI, and I'd be going, how did these criminals, get these fraudulent funds? And I'll go, oh, well, they applied for this, and they got this grant, and they did this. And I would just do that. I would just start receiving checks. And if they ever want to bust me, I mean, we have their statement saying we're not going to investigate this. I don't know. They're apparently not going to investigate it. I am a cis white male. You don't think I could find a Nigerian guy as a front man? You don't think I could find a Asian woman to pretend to be the president of my daycare? Folks, Americans haven't even tried to scam the system because we like the system and it operates. But man, once some Americans get involved in this fraud, you're going to see things you've never seen before. But seriously, what are you supposed to do about this other than overthrow your system and put all these criminals in prison forever?
Can a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement? There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder to put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Folks, AlexJonesLive.com, that's URL to share around, let everybody know where the news is happening. We got a lot of more diversity news to get into. Let's go to clip number 7 here, where once again, yet another gigantic H-1B visa fraud ring has been discovered, as if it's all, not all absolutely, all of it is fraud. All of it is fraud. All of it. It shouldn't exist. This is the frustration when they're like, don't worry, guys, we're launching a probe to investigate the H-1B. I don't want the H-1B visa program probed, investigated, limited, altered. I want it gutted and eliminated. Let me rephrase that. For the survival of America, it must be gutted and eliminated. And there's no argument against that. There really isn't. And if companies are so desperate for foreign workers that they cannot survive without them, then they can go to other countries. They cannot be a part of our market because they're just selling us out and exploiting us, and it's happening absolutely everywhere, an incredibly rapid clip. And so the fraud is just on top of everything else. This is like a fraudulent charity, right? There's a charity that claims to be collecting money for orphans, but there are no orphans. They just keep the money. You fall for this. You give them money thinking you're being charitable. They pocket that money, but then they take your credit card number and they run up a bunch of charges for other stuff. It's fraud on top of fraud. The original giving of the money is already on fraudulent precepts. It's already being made on fraudulent promises. Then they overcharge you by a couple tens of billions of dollars. How Trump can fix the H-1B visa system? No, you can't. It's not for Americans. It shouldn't exist. But the corporations like it. Here's yet another example of yet another massive fraud ring from H-1B visas. Let's watch.
The holders since 2015. Over 70% came from India and nearly 12% from China. And when you zoom in on this map you're looking at, you can see where most are being hired. The dark red spots show a high density of H-1B visa holders. And now we're learning more about the fraud within the program. One former official tells Newsweek that up to 90% of applications, 90% from India, contain fraudulent documents or involve unqualified applicants. And finance law enforcement in India claim it has uncovered a network of universities that produce fake degrees, which were possibly used to obtain these high-skilled H-1B visas, including one school which allegedly stole over 36,000 fake degrees, sold, I should say. It cost as little as $1,400 for one of those. And while these are supposed to be high-skilled employees, during almost all of Biden's time in office, 83% got junior or entry-level positions. And now Texas is taking action, cracking down on those abusing the program.
Shouldn't be a program. The program shouldn't exist. This is ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't, you know, the whole map should be white. You know, no pun intended, but for real though, but obviously you wouldn't have this program if you actually wanted what's best for America. Like that's it. That's the ultimate conclusion. Just if you wanted what was best for America, you would have never made this program. You would have never created this. And once again, you know, you take something that, okay, maybe there was like a problem one time that, you know, our laws sort of made worse. And so it was like, okay, well, we'll make a little change. You know, in World War II, when the Jews were being slaughtered by the Germans and wanted to escape, and we were like, well, you know, if we had to go through the normal process, you'd all die. So I guess, all right, we'll have this thing we call asylum where, all right, we're not totally undoing our immigration program, but we'll give you some leeway. You can come here and hang out for a little bit while we process you. That seems like a pretty good solution. Fast forward 80 years, and it's everyone with a cell phone in Mexico is an asylum seeker that must get admission to America and welfare on top of it. It's like, this is absurd. 14th Amendment, exactly the same thing. Well, we have this law that says only white guys can be naturalized, but there are some people that are obviously equal citizens with everybody else. And, you know, maybe we could do a little carve out for them. We've got all these slaves that, you know, they were born before they were citizens. So, you know, what do we do with that? All right. Well, their children, let's just make their children citizens. That's an easy sort of patch over this, you know, unique and, you know, unusual circumstance. We'll have to make up, but we'll do something called the 14th Amendment. Fast forward 100 years. And Mexicans are literally running like birth tourism, so you can just get an American citizenship for $200 plus the flight of cost of your flight. H-1B, kind of the same thing, right? The only, like, it was created for the unique and extraordinary circumstance where like every single engineer in America had been hired, where a company was trying to hire people in America, and the fact that we didn't have enough people to hire would have been a barrier to their continuing existence or continuing development, right? For the sake of America, having the best technology for our, you know, industry to outcompete the rest of the world, then you know, it's a problem if we're not producing enough engineers and companies are sitting there going, we could be creating great stuff. We just don't have the manpower to do it. Okay, fine. We have the shortage until we can create more engineers so we can get more people through the system. We'll bring in some scab labor to you know, help you not have to shrink in size in the meantime. Suddenly that has become, you are now incentivized to fire American workers, hire H-1B visas, and just sell out the American people, destroy the American middle class, cripple the American economy, and benefit your own ethnic cohort and their well-publicized and now like widely acknowledged plot for world domination through demographic overwhelming. Like, yeah, I don't, you know, it's not that complicated. It's not all that complicated, actually. These things just shouldn't exist. Whether they needed to exist when they were created is not actually relevant, because the time that they were created and the situation for which they were established no longer exists. They are being abused to the point of unrecognizability. These are not the programs they were intended to be. We do not have to keep them going. This is the other thing. To expand on the metaphor I said earlier, this is like you give your credit card to a fraudulent charity. So already, well, you say you want to give them $20, they take the $20. There was nothing, you know, they didn't steal it from you, but they gained it on fraudulent premises. So that's theft. They stole that from you. Then they run up the credit card for hundreds and hundreds of dollars of stuff that you never told them they could have. And then it's like, you're just like tearing your hair out. Like, what do I do? It's like, cancel the card. What are you talking about? And it's like every week you come back, you're like, you know, they're still spending money on that card. And I'm like, cancel the card. Why do you allow the card to still operate? You're still paying the credit card bill for the credit card that was stolen and is being used by scammers. Cancel the card. I'm not going to talk to you about this anymore. I don't want to hear your sob story about how they spent more money on the card that you could cancel at any moment and just don't. Just cancel the card. Just cancel the program. Not that complicated. Meanwhile, our attempts to actually do some level of deportations are failing, apparently. ICE agents shoot driver trying to hit officer with car in Maine. A person has died following a shooting in Maine that involved Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The incident took place on Monday morning near Poole Street in Biddeford. A witness to the shooting said that he saw the person who was driving try to hit the ICE officer with a car. Authorities have also said the person who was shot by agents was driving at the federal officers when the incident occurred, per the New York Post. According to House Speaker Ryan Fechtow, a Democrat, this morning a shooting occurred in Biddeford. A person was killed. ICE was involved. State police and Department of Public Safety are now on the scene to gather details and would expect the FBI to investigate as well. These are the details I have at this time. I'll provide other updates as they're related to me. Another witness of the shooting named Lucas Scott told Portland Press Herald that he saw an ICE agent get out of an unmarked vehicle and then saw the ICE agent draw his weapon. At that moment, while yelling at the driver of a vehicle, the ICE agent shot at the driver who was, quote, trying to hit the ICE officer with the vehicle, Lucas recounted. He said that the agent fired 4 shots. The man who was shot has been identified as a Colombian migrant, but his name has not been immediately released. Footage of the incident has emerged showing the vehicle going in circles with the ICE agent following alongside the vehicle yelling. It is not clear if the footage was taken before or after the shots were fired. Okay, so you don't want to get shot by ICE. You better go home, all right? I think the main takeaway here is for all immigrants, you are in danger, okay? I'm not saying you should be. I'm not saying it's a good thing you're in danger. You just clearly are, okay? It's best to avoid all possibility of getting caught. You better go home now where nobody will be hunting you down. Go back to your home countries where ICE will no longer care about you or have any reason to try to get you at all. Okay? Go home. You need to go home now. I don't feel that bad, to be honest with you. And I'm not exactly surprised that vehicle ramming attacks have, no pun intended, ramped up recently. Because it's a strategy deliberately being taught to ICE protesters and illegal immigrants by well-publicized coalitions of leftist subversives who are training people to disobey our laws and stay in our country illegally. I still don't understand why we're doing it this way. just look, if it was me and you told me you have the federal government's resources, deport illegal immigrants, I swear to you, I don't even think I would need 100 agents. I think it would be so, I think you just use pressure, you use, you know, warfare tactics, you isolate a neighborhood, you cordon it off, you move in, problem solved. Like, this, it's this one-off, we're literally running around, like, chasing them in the streets and, like, trying to grab them, like Tom and Jerry. This is so absurd. Why do you think the deportations are like one-tenth the level that they need to be at just to get back to status quo 2020? Because we're doing it in this retarded, disconnected, discombobulated, structured way that's also not being publicized, when the publicity is a motivating factor for people leaving the country and self-deporting. I don't want people killed, but I do want people with the fear of ICE in their hearts. I do want every legal immigrant to be looking over their shoulder at every single moment, knowing that at any moment they could be met with an overwhelming force. Not like, oh, they're going to have to fight, or like they're going to have to run away. Like that's not even an option. That like everybody who tries that, it ends up way worse for them. So just go home. Just go home. But instead, we got to deal with this. So, it's just infuriating. Congresswoman Shelley Pingtree posted a reaction to the shooting and said, "I'm aware of reports that somebody was fatally shot and ICE may be involved. We'll share this information. We'll share more information as we get it." Meanwhile, something we told you about a while ago is finally coming to fruition. Charlottesville's Lee statue has now been melted down, transformed into a racial diversity monument. The statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee was at the heart of the Charlottesville protest in 2017, followed by the Unite the Right rally where Heather Heyer was killed. The rally was funded in part by the SPLC, which paid for so-called informants to travel to the rally and encourage white nationalists to go fundraise off it when it was over. The statue was melted down, and the metal will now be repurposed by the Boston firm Model of Architecture Serving Society to create something the Washington Post is calling a monument to racial diversity. This is the same firm that created the Embrace, which was meant to symbolize Coretta Scott and Martin Luther King Jr., but instead looks like an incredibly lewd statue from many different angles. The same firm that brought that atrocity to life will be creating a monument to a concept as vague as racial diversity. They were chosen after a design competition that lasted months. The firm's winning idea was to turn the metal into an African tree. They call the thing rooted, and it's unclear why they're planting an African tree in Charlottesville instead of something that's more representative of American, quote-unquote, racial diversity. Because racial diversity is an obvious and blatant lie. This is not complicated. They just hate white people. This is just an attack on white people. They're simply taking a symbol of white people, destroying it, and turning it into a symbol of black people. It's not that complicated. It's not that sophisticated. You don't need a real, nuanced reading of their motivations here. Gee, why did they take down the statue of a beloved Confederate general and put up a statue of African trees? What does that even mean? Who knows? Who could possibly say? It's just racial supremacy, anti-white hatred, and a destruction of history so they can rewrite history into something it never was. It's not that, it's just a humiliation ritual. You understand that? Again, it's really not complicated at all. Now, this was a story, I'm pretty sure Alex covered it extensively last week. I never got around to it, but I probably should have. But it was several viral videos all in a week's time in Texas of people being arrested for their speech. Being arrested because they were saying things that, potentially could be offensive to Muslims or whatever. Well, Texas police admit officer made inaccurate First Amendment remarks after a preacher was cited at a pride event. A viral video showed Fort Worth officers telling a Christian preacher that offensive speech could be ticketed. The Five discussed this on Fox News, the Fort Worth Police Department acknowledged that an officer made certain statements that were not accurate during a viral encounter last month with a street preacher outside of a Pride festival, while maintaining that the citation he received stemmed from the use of a bullhorn that allegedly violated the city's noise ordinance, not the content of the preacher's speech. Oh, I'm sure. We got it. We got to stop letting people get away with stuff like this. It was obviously not about the noise level, like, just stop. But you can always do that, right? You can let everybody break the noise ordinance, but you can only apply it to the Christian preacher, and you can look at it and go, well, technically, he was over the ordinance, but that's just obviously not the reason you're charging him. The question I would have is, why did the police think that this was something that they were allowed to do? Like, I don't think the cop just made this up himself. I probably should have brought in the video, but, you know, in the video, he's like, it's a gray area. A video posted on X on July 8th by Rich Pinkowski, who identifies himself on social media as a Christian street preacher, said, Fort Worth police officer says calling a biological male a male is a gray area, and that could be citable at some point. And then he said he can't do anything about half-naked men running around children at Pride. In the video, a male Fort Worth officer said calling a biological male sir is a gray area, and he would potentially ticket people for offensive language. Another female officer said, quote, if somebody is offended by your talking, then we have a problem. Who is training the police officers to think like this? Where are they getting these ideas? Because that they're not coming up with them themselves. They're being trained to treat this in this way. And this, of course, is the downstream inevitable consequence of the absurd language policing that really first got going in a strong way following Donald Trump's appearance on the political stage. But it was always this nebulous kind of chain of events where it was like, well, if you say this thing, then really you're promoting this idea, which these people have committed violence on. So in a way, you're saying things actually is violence. Fort Worth police exposed for violating the First Amendment. So it appears as though that mindset, which we tried desperately to elucidate and argue against while it was first being formulated in the minds of the American masses, has now been firmly implanted in our institutions. And you have police officers sort of adopting this, whether they even realize it or not, and going, well, you know, we would never arrest anybody for speech. Obviously, we have the First Amendment. That's our sacred right. Free speech is the bedrock of American civilization. But if you're causing problems, you know, we're here to stop violence. And if you're saying things that are making people so angry that they're attacking you, then, you know, maybe it's you that's, you know, if we follow the chain of events, you're the one who initiated it, actually. So this is not. This is yet another one of these things, whether it's the flock cameras or the Israeli stuff. I mean, all of it is like, we have to now tear this apart, right? We have to approach this in the same way that lefties approach violations of their worldview. Again, I'll bring up the best example, the perfect example that I always talk about, Loudoun County. So just take an instance where, like, oh, this one teacher in this one school did one lesson that offended one student. What happened? What happened as a consequence of that? Did they say, you know, the school admitted it was a little bit offensive and, you know, they won't do it again? And that was the end of it? No. Everybody descended on Loudoun and demanded that the school district do an entire evaluation, audit every single classroom, and create a new office that will be staffed with one of the NAACP operators. You know, one of their agents will now have an official position in the school district to guarantee that everything comports with their worldview. That's the strategy we need to have. When you have multiple officers from the same police department all saying that, you know, speech is a gray area. You know, it might not be illegal for you to say that, but I may be able to cite you for disturbing the peace for saying that. This is an issue. This is a problem. This is not something that we can simply get them to admit is wrong and then say, okay, you've learned your lesson. No, they have to learn their lesson. These police officers have to be fired. The police department has to come out and explain why they thought this was the case. Their leadership has to be removed from his position, and somebody else who understands the First Amendment needs to take their place. We need to stop being okay with being abused. We need to stop being okay with the incremental destruction of our rights. We need to stop being okay with when the tyrants get caught and apologize, saying it's okay, just don't do it again. They need to be punished. These police officers need to be punished, and the investigation needs to start. Like, we need to have the Congress of Texas launch an investigation, bring these people in, question them under oath. Who told you that? Who told you you were supposed to go out and arrest people for offensive speech? Where did you get that information? Who is training you? Where did this training come from? Who's providing the funding for the training? This every single time something like this happens, it's treated as the end of the event. Because there's always a process, right? It's always a, well, that never happened. We never did that. Well, we maybe did that, but it was a unique situation and this doesn't fit. I mean, you can look at what happened in the UK, recently with the, I can't remember what video it was. It was another one like, Henry Novak of, you know, a white guy being attacked and the police officer. That's what it was. It was the white kid getting attacked by a group of non-white people and the officers running up and slamming the kid into the wall. And, you know, first they were like, yeah, an event happened and it was all totally kosher. It was all good. You know, we handled it. And then the video came out and they were like, well, you shouldn't watch that video. And the video doesn't tell the whole story. So actually we did do things right and stop being an extremist. And then enough public pressure eventually said, okay, all right. It turns out that they may have, you know, the police officers may have acted incorrectly and we're going to have a talking to. And then it's like, okay, whew, they admitted it. See, we won. See, we were right. Morally, we were correct. And it's like nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. The same thing's going to happen again immediately because nothing has changed, because no punishment has been leveled. No incentives have been altered. No humiliation for the people that did it to serve as a warning for anybody else into the future. We've got to stop treating the admission as if that's the end of the process. That should be, if anything, really the initiation of the process. Okay, so you admit that your officers just came upon a scene of a man being beaten by strangers and you immediately joined in on the beating and then arrested the victim and then lied to us all about it. You just admitted that you did all of that and you expect that to be the end of it? Nobody's going to hold themselves to account, folks. These police officers are not going to hold themselves to account. We have to. We have to have some sort of, if not law, at least major popular motivation to impose something like attempted tyranny. This is a violation of the law against attempted tyranny. Did they actually arrest the guy for his speech? No, but they will. They will do that next if you don't stop them. We'll be back on the other side with hour two. I think we'll start with a 5-minute video from Jay Dyer, who was on Tucker Carlson earlier today, because we're moving on up, folks. It's a big thing.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Basically, there's an idea in the Middle Ages called nominalism. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay, so nominalism is the idea that there are only names to things, not essences. So there's no human nature. There's no dog nature. When we talk about natures or classes or sets of things, we're not giving an ontological or metaphysical status. We're just simply classing things together linguistically in a set. The Middle Ages in the ancient world, the time of Paul or the, you know, church fathers, they thought very differently. They thought that things have natures, they have essences. And so the words aren't just terms or nominal namism. They actually describe what's really there in them metaphysically. Okay. So there is human nature. And in Orthodox theology, Christ assumes.
Who would deny that?
In the Middle Ages, it begins with people like William of Ockham. So Ockham is the first nominalist. And
the man with the razor.
Exactly. He's known for that. And he challenges some kind of established ideas of like essential. It's called essentialism, that things have essences. And so he also goes up against this idea of universals, that there's no such thing as a universal class or essence of a thing. And that had been kind of the norm since Plato and Aristotle as well. But so you get a denial of essentialism and essences, and then you get another guy named Gabriel Bile, and he's very influential on Martin Luther. And so when the Reformation kicks off, there's this debate about how could you be called righteous if you're not in fact righteous. So if as a human being you are, you know, menstrual rags, as Isaiah says, as the reformer said, then how could God call you righteous without being a liar? What enter in nominalism, and nominalism is able to say, because things don't have actually have essences, they just have names. And so if God calls you that, you are that legally, even though in actual fact you're wicked. So that was, and Luther was very happy to utilize that nominalistic approach. And by the way, this is not just my theory. There's famous Lutheran scholars. There's a book called Harvest of Medieval Theology by Heiko Obermann. And the whole thesis of that book by a Lutheran is that Luther had to use nominalism. So we're also, though, moving away not just from theological squabbles, but the idea that things have natures. And this is how we get to David Hume and Kant and these Enlightenment figures, which give us the, you know, scientific revolution, supposedly. This is how we get to there's no male and female. So you can see kind of the logical train here. If things don't have essences, well, then they don't actually have genders, right? Objectively, because everything is just a name. So I can just name myself he, him, zer, ze, it, right? I'm not trying to go too fast or too far in the sense of like
ideology,
but I'm saying there is an ideological sort of progression that you can get from nominalism to where we are now with postmodernism. And then with essentially,
it's interesting that an adult could believe in something like that. I mean, having lived your life, known people, known animals, seen nature, and arrive at the conclusion that nothing has an essence. Everything is just what we call it. Like that flies in the face of your experience. It has to, right?
What's that saying that, you have to be an academic to be really stupid?
Yeah. Right? I mean, I guess that's right.
Yeah. To be indoctrinated into believing some sort of, I remember Terrence McKenna. Do you remember the psychonaut Terrence McKenna? I remember reading it one time and he said something like,
this is all just magical thinking. You know, this, if you take the shroom, you're going to see that things don't have essences, that things just have names and you just change the name.
And I'm like, that's the gender idea right there.
So that's Jay Dyer on with Tucker Carlson. Just incredible to see. Always awesome to see. Friends of the show, friends of the network, blowing up and doing even better. So I haven't actually gotten to see the whole episode because it just came out today and I was doing my news gathering. Haven't gotten to watch it, but that was just one of many clips flying around there. So congratulations to Jay Dyer, and hopefully a lot of people wake up from his, I'm sure, extremely powerful Tucker Carlson appearance there. We're going to get into all sorts of crazy stuff in the next hour. We'll report a little more on Lady Graham, the late Lindsey Graham, as well as what's going on in Europe and our desperate attempts to solve problems that don't exist while continuing to manufacture very real problems that are destroying us completely, holistically, comprehensively, from the inside out. Yeah, we got a lot still to cover, folks. Stay tuned. The videos I'll show you on the other side, you'll not want to miss. Go to theoxygenstore.com/Harrison to support us, and we'll be back in 90 seconds. Don't go anywhere.
Fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to thealicejonesstore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did.
Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit thealexjonesstore.com today.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. You know, I'm hesitating here because I'm about to do something I'm not very comfortable with, which is maybe brag a little bit, partly because I'm not even really sure if I'm responsible for this, but I'm pretty sure I am. And I just, you know, for one thing, it's nice knowing that I may very well have a sizable impact on the wider, you know, discussion overall. Basically, if you are a regular viewer of this show, I really hope, because the thing, all right, I don't really know how to explain this, but like there are so many things that I cover that then suddenly become giant topics like 2 weeks later. And it's like uncanny. It's like kind of weird how much it happens. And it used to be a regular joke with like Tucker Carlson. Would be like, I would cover something and a week later he would say exactly the same thing as me verbatim. It's kind of nice. On the other hand, I'm like, are they getting this from me? Cause here's the thing. I know where I'm getting my information from. I know where I'm getting my inspiration from. Are they getting it from the same source or are they getting it from me? So let's go to clip number 40 here. I'm not going to try to take credit for this, but I kind of am. Let's watch.
There's a great book out there if you want to find out more about this. I think it's called Rise and Kill First. It's based on the philosophy of the Mossad that strikes first on this, and it's excruciatingly detailed. And you can see when they execute on this, they execute on this. We've got Kurt Mills.
All right, so that's Steve Bannon's War Room. Encouraging to go read Rise and Kill First. Well, why did that book come to his mind? Why is he talking about that book, I wonder? Because I know why I brought up the book. I brought up the book about 3 weeks ago and have been doing a series on it for NXR on Off Limits News that you can find on YouTube. And suddenly he's talking about Rise and Kill First. I thought about the book because having read it years ago, I then heard Benjamin Netanyahu say the term rise and kill first. And I thought, oh, I know. I'll use this clip of Benjamin Netanyahu saying this in order to start a discussion on the book Rise and Kill First, which are only related because they both, you know, invoke that phrase. Maybe Steve Bannon was equally inspired. Maybe. But this is the type of thing I mean where I go, you know, there are some things where I kind of see it entering into the zeitgeist and maybe I start covering it and then, but you know, I didn't, but that's me seeing it elsewhere and then starting, but for Rise and Kill First, I didn't see anybody else talking about this book. I heard the phrase and I decided to talk about the book. Let's go now to clip number 30 here.
So let's talk about this Israel thing. Huh? Personally, when I look at the evidence, when I read books like this one, which is an Israeli written history of the history of Mossad and their targeted killing programs, it's an extremely extensive volume because there's a lot of history of Mossad's targeted killings. Let's just say that. When you actually learn your history about the world's foremost assassination nation, the country that assassinates more people than all other countries combined, literally, the country that has built its entire military sort of power projection on assassination specifically, built their entire intelligence apparatus on targeted killings specifically. Well, once you actually know your history about all that, you actually know where the leadership in Israel came from and the things that they've done to gain power and the things that they are willing to do to keep it. It does remind you of this text message chain that was a hoax. Until Candace published it, Jewish donors play into all the stereotypes. I cannot and will not be bullied like this, leaving me no choice but to leave the pro-Israel cause. This was sent to Jewish donors. This was sent to the big dogs. This was not some idle conversation with his friend. This was sent directly to the one people that would be offended by it. This was him playing ball. And by the way, in it, he says, "We won't cancel Tucker. I'm thinking of inviting Candace." And he's losing millions of dollars over that decision. And he's pissed. But then it makes you think about messages like this. April 3rd, 2025. It's going unnoticed because so much other news is happening, but the war drums are beating again in DC. The warmongers worry this is their last chance to get the white whale they've been chasing for 30 years, an all-out regime change war against Iran. A new right, Middle
so
East
we,
war
we,
would
we can be- take this out. So that's Ian Carroll, and he's talking about the assassination of Charlie Kirk, which, you know, more has come out from that, and we'll address that in just a second. But of course, he starts off that by holding up the book Rise and Kill First. Now, that one I don't have to speculate on because Ian literally texted me. He's like, "I watched your episode on Rise and Kill First, and I bought the book, and oh my God, this is amazing." So, the reason I'm saying this is because if you're a member of this audience, it's got to feel kind of weird because it feels weird to me. It feels weird to me. And if you're a regular everyday viewer, I really hope that you also recognize this because part of me feels a little bit crazy. Part of me is like, I cannot be the one actually causing it. But like, how many people have you heard, you know, refer to attacks on America by Israel as, you know, the Eighth Front, that type of stuff? The point I'm making is while, you know, the history of InfoWars and Alex and the Alex Jones Network and everything. I mean, we, and when I say we, I mean mostly Alex and people that came before me sort of created, established the modern right-wing ecosystem. Like the technology, we were the first to adopt it, but the stances, you know, Alex was sort of the first to really elucidate and solidify all of them from the MAHA to the anti-war movement. I mean, but still, like, this is in no way over. We are still, and weirdly, I feel like I, to a very outsized degree, are still, like, shaping the conversation that's going on. Again, I do, like, this makes me uncomfortable. I feel like I start to cringe when I'm like, I am responsible for all of this. But, like, no, but I actually am, though. But you actually are, by giving me this platform. We actually are dictating the course of the conversation moving forward. And again, you know, what happens, I get this kind of bittersweet feeling where I'll see Tucker Carlson do a big long thing about MAID and, you know, the slow but sure introduction of medically assisted suicide in America. And I'm like, good, he's talking about it. But I'm also like, we have been talking about this for so long and it must be nice for the audience just knowing, like, you can just watch the Alex Jones Network and literally be months ahead of everybody. On everything, on absolutely everything, months ahead and on the right side. And so this also relates to the Charlie Kirk assassination and the trial that's been going on. Because literally, I was just like doing other stuff. It was either Friday or Saturday. I guess it was Friday or Saturday. I guess it was Friday. So I was doing other stuff and I was off. I got a comment from somebody being like, this must be a terrible day for you. And I was just like, I'm having a great day. What is he talking about? What could he possibly be talking about? I'm like looking through the news. I'm like, what had, did something happen with Alex Jones Network? Like, no, nothing happened with that. I'm like, why would this be a terrible? It literally took me a minute to be like, oh, he thinks I'm like a Israel did it. You know, Tyler Robinson is a total patsy type guy, and that I would be devastated by the fact that video was released of the shooter shooting. And it's like, and it literally, it took me like 5 minutes to be like, what is he talking? Why does he think anything would, there's no bad news today? Like, and then I was like, oh, okay. He thinks I'm like somebody who's pushing for Tyler Robinson to be a total patsy. When I've been abundantly clear, and to be honest with you, I went back and I watched a bunch of footage from like the days after Charlie Kirk was murdered. And like, we nailed it on day one. Like, we nailed it on day one. I basically haven't changed my perspective ever since then. And anytime anybody brought up conversations about devices and all this stuff, you know, I'm always a little bit of two minds. You know, I would always say that Israel was always, you know, once I thought about it for a little bit, definitely shot up to the top of the suspect list, but also acknowledging that if they were to have had a hand or somehow involved, we would never have evidence of that. And I would never expect there to be evidence of that. I would be shocked if there was. The other thing was that from the first second, you know, we saw the footage, it was obvious to me that the shooter had been in an elevated position, more or less where the shooter was alleged to be. And that was because the first video I saw was from an up, you know, elevated position. And the moment the shot went off, everybody turned and looked at where the sound of the shot came from. And they all turned and looked right at the building where the shooter was supposed to be. And what happens in conspiracy theorizing is people will sort of take a misstep initially, and then they'll start sort of building up theories on top of that initial misstep instead of just going back and going, wait, this doesn't make any sense. So it'll be like, you've got the gunshot and you've got Charlie Kirk getting hit. Then there was some suspicion about a, you know, device used, an explosive device. Maybe the microphone had explosives in it. Now there's precedent for this, not just what Israel did to Hezbollah with the pagers, but look, they have a very long and storied history of packing explosives into electronic devices and setting them off. So it's worth it to talk about that. It's worth it to discuss that. It's worth it to say, look, this might sound crazy, but crazier things have happened. Let's look at examples in history where this exact type of device was used. Now, whether it was used here or not, I don't think it was, but you know, it's actually not the craziest idea. The crazy part is, why would you have a shooter in position with a rifle taking a shot if you had an explosive microphone? That doesn't make any sense. But then people start, like, they just sort of go off that premise and they go, well, you would have the guy shooting the rifle to distract from people, to make you think that it was a rifle shooter in order to draw attention away from the, you know, explosive device. And it's like, no, this doesn't make any sense. Go back, take a step back. If you're going to go through the trouble of putting somebody with a gun in a position from which they could snipe, why would you not just have them snipe him? I mean, put yourself in the mindset of somebody planning this op. You're going to put somebody in a sniper's nest. You're going to have them actually make a sound, shoot a gun, something that makes noise and causes people to look. And then you're going to have a microphone explode, but it's got to look exactly like a gunshot because there's going to be a million video, you know, cameras filming this. So it's got to be perfect. And it also has to happen the instant that the gun goes off. You can't have a millisecond of, you know, that would have been weird. Pow. You know, you can't have that. It's got to be the instant. All of these variables, every one of which makes pulling something like that off successfully many, many times less likely to actually get pulled off. Every one of these, you know, developments in the plan would be another fail point. So it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I saw with my own eyes the video of the gunshot going off and everybody in unison at the same time in a way that seemed perfectly natural, looking right towards where the sniper's nest would be. So that gets locked in for me, that I know for an absolute, and then of course there was video of the guy on the roof. There's video before the shot. There's video after the shot of the guy running across the roof that was caught in that pan across of the big crowd. And then you've got the footage of the guy jumping off the roof. So like we know a guy was there on the roof. That you can lock away. You can establish that as an absolute fact. Everything else that you come up with or fantasize or theorize about has to comport with that. And so, yeah, if you're going to, you know, have this guy as a distraction, so the real guy, it just doesn't make any sense. In the same way that I think about the 9/11 conspiracy theories or anything else, it's like if I'm sitting here planning, am I really going to absorb all of the risk of we're going to hijack a plane, then we're going to land the plane in a military base, then we're going to gas the people, and then we're going to fake phone calls, or am I just going to fly a plane into a building? I'm just going to fly a plane in the building. I might have explosives in the building, so I guarantee it goes down. I might have, you know, there's lots of different things to it, but why would you have somebody sneak onto the roof, lie in a prone position, take the shot, but then actually none of that was even necessary? It doesn't make any sense. Assassinations are not carried out that way. The way they're carried out is you have the guy shoot him. That actually answers all these questions. The only shortcoming that I ever saw in the sort of official theory, now whether it was Tyler Robinson or not, that gets into different questions. And you can, you know, obviously speculate wildly about that, and there's lots of reason to, in my opinion. But you've got the guy there taking the shot. It's not that complicated. It's not that hard. And the only thing that was missing was the fact that a .30-06 should have blown his head off and it didn't. And so I said over and over, that's the only missing piece there, but that could easily be filled in by, you know, a frangible round, some sort of soft tip round like that. This was always my stance. And so while you could have watched, I mean, literally you could have watched 24 hours of content a day since the day Charlie died. And you can speculate about all sorts of different angles. And I've reported on pretty much all of the big developments, the Google searches in Israel, the suspicious planes turning off their transponders. All of that is worth looking into. But none of it altered the fact that there was a gunshot from an elevated position the instant that Charlie Kirk got hit in the neck by something. And that's what we're starting with. So everything else, if it contradicts that or makes that reality too complicated to understand, then it's got to be thrown out. It's got to go away. And what you're left with is just like the absolute provable, I saw with my own eyes facts, and then you build up from there. So the point of all of this is like, I don't know what other people are talking about. I don't know what they're speculating about. I watch their content and I'm just like, what are we even doing here? You can watch my coverage from Charlie Kirk the first week that it happened, and my positions basically haven't changed. Anything major that's come up. Now, the one wrinkle in all of this, let me say one more thing. Because a lot of people also, they get very mad at Nick Fuentes for buying the official story. Do people not understand the personal incentives Nick Fuentes might have for wanting the official story to be true? I'm not even saying this is a conscious thing for him necessarily, or even that this is really, I think he's perfectly capable of explaining his own position. I think it's a perfectly reasonable one. But do we understand that Nick Fuentes was like the primary number one antagonist of Charlie Kirk for like years? And that I guarantee you, those like 33 hours after Charlie Kirk's murder were the most anxiety ridden of Nick Fuentes' life. Because I guarantee you, Nick Fuentes was sitting there for the entirety of the 10th and 11th of September, just being like, please, please don't be a Groyper. Please, for the love of God, do not be a Groyper. Just please. Because that would have destroyed everything. I mean, that, you know, they would have like put Nick in jail if it had been a follower of his that did it. So you don't think he might have had some personal reason to, but people are just like, he's just buying the Fed slop. I'm like, No, dude, he has his own unique perspective on this. Again, I don't think he's being dishonest. And he's just like, I'm going to say it's Tyler so they don't think it's me or anything like that. I just think you got to understand the perspective that he's operating from. And it makes, you know, perfectly his reaction makes perfect sense once you do that. And of course, they tried to make him a MAGA groiper anyway. So my role here and my purpose here is to try to get to the truth and try to see things other people aren't seeing. I was the only one who reported on Charlie Kirk's break with Israel while it was happening. I was the only one who noticed that he seemed rather nervous about how angry some of his Jewish supporters were getting. I was one that actually tweeted out. And other people are like, you have to go on the stand. What if they call you to trial? I'm like, I'll go testify. What do you think you're going to learn? This is another thing I don't understand. People are like, you have to tell us who told you that Charlie Kirk said that he feared Israel would kill him. And it's just like, why? What do you think you're going to learn from that? The thing that happened is Charlie Kirk said he thought Israel was going to kill him. That's where the information came from. Who he told that to, who then told me, why would that matter? I really don't understand why that would matter. If somebody was making threats to Charlie and I was withholding who was making threats to him, okay, yeah, now I'm a barrier to finding justice. But Charlie Kirk says, I think Israel's going to kill me. To one of his friends, that friend tells me, I tweeted out, and it's like, we have to know who that friend is, but why? It wouldn't actually elucidate anything. Let's just say, what if I told you it was Candace Owens' husband? He told me. What does that change? What does that matter? What if I told you it was Charlie Kirk's sister? She told me. Why does that matter? Neither one of these people are the people, by the way, obviously, but this is what I don't get. It's like, maybe you got to leave the conspiracy theorizing to the professionals here, because you're hyper-focused on things that don't actually matter, that don't actually have an impact on what the outcome of the conspiracy would be. I'm trying to teach you how to think. I'm trying to teach you how to look at this stuff and dissect it effectively and appropriately, and to understand certain things we'll just never know. Certain things we can know for an absolute fact, and we can't, you know, be driven one way or the other from those things. And I say this because I feel bad for a lot of the people that like put their reputation, put their lives on the line saying, you know, there's absolutely no way it was Tyler Robinson. I never said that. I said, look, there's a lot of suspicious stuff about this. I think we still have some unanswered questions. But here's the real twist in all of it. Because when I look at the evidence that's been presented, it seems fairly convincing. When I hear the reports of what the reporters say they saw, and I'll show you a video in just a second, I'm inclined to believe them. But then I think back to the few weeks, the first weeks after Charlie Kirk was murdered, and I remember hearing and never heard any information to the contrary, and since then have had it confirmed that people in the Trump administration, people in the highest rungs of the intelligence apparatus, people in the Senate, in some of the most important and sensitive committee hearings, all thought Israel had a hand in Charlie Kirk's murder. They all did. And when you look at it like that, you know, maybe some more of the actions of Cash Patel and the like make more sense, start to click together. And so while it's like, I can't prove that Israel had a hand in it, I can't disprove that Israel had a hand in it, I'm inclined to believe the official story, except I know from personal, firsthand, multiple sources that there were discussions in the White House and the Senate, like Armed Services Committee, and that the people in the highest rungs of our government were convinced that Israel had a hand in Charlie Kirk's murder. Not because I said anything, because of information that they had. So I can't just throw that out. I can't just say, you know, there's absolutely no validity in that, because I know I heard personally from firsthand sources that people in the intelligence community were convinced Israel was behind it. Take that for what you will.
And
a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Last week, during the preliminary hearing of Tyler Robinson, in the case of the murder of Charlie Kirk, there was about halfway through the week, the prosecution was asked, is there a video of Tyler Robinson taking the shot? And they said no. If you remember watching the show at the time, I was sort of flabbergasted at this, going, but we know they have the footage. But we see the shot. We know you can see him going there. You can see him walking away. What do you mean they don't have the video? They must have the video footage. That would be crazy if they didn't have the video footage. Now, apparently they did, and they showed it. I have seen some differing perspective on this. I saw other people that were in the courtroom basically say, you really couldn't tell anything from the video. It was that same very, you know, you can see a guy take a shot, but you can't see anything, really. I mean, it's the same footage that we've had. However, a lot of other people there were saying that the video was very clear, and it was so clear it, you know, caused them to have an emotional reaction equivalent to the first time they saw the original footage of Charlie Kirk being murdered. Here's Jack Posobiec on what he saw in the courtroom.
I think everything's been proven. I think it's proven. It's, I would say, beyond probable cause at this point. I think that the question for me is how do you even get reasonable doubt when there's so much evidence? But the thing that I do just have to say is that I know that, you know, you guys watching on live stream couldn't see the last video that was shown. Well, it wasn't edited. It was zoomed in.
Yeah.
It was zoomed in from the surveillance video off campus, and specifically the part of, you know, the Losee Center, the roof, and you see everything. You see everything. He climbs over. He assembles the gun. He runs over to the edge. You know, gets down in a prone position, and you see the time, and we all know what time, and it was like so slow, just watching those seconds click, 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 and then you see him take the shot, and he takes the shot, and then immediately runs, and we've seen that video already, but I knew we were going to watch that, but I wasn't prepared to see this side of what happened because we'd never seen it before. We saw the other end of the shot, obviously, but this was a whole other level of just evil. And I got very upset watching it. And obviously the family was very hard for them to watch. And I looked over and I saw Tyler wasn't even looking. He wasn't even looking. See what he did. And I would just say that I do wish, the public could see that. I hope that that video is made public. Not because I want it to happen. I didn't want any of this to happen. I hate all of this. I hate being here. But people need to see what happened. People need to see the other side of this, because this is a case. We need to see the truth. We need to see the facts. And this is, it's the video of the sniper taking a shot. It is exactly what you think it would look like, but it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to watch. Probably since the initial, when this happened, the first video.
All right, so that was Jack Posobiec's response, and I heard, you know, similar responses from others like Benny Johnson who were there. And some people were saying, you know, you can tell it's Tyler. It's just, like, undeniable. I can't wait to see it ourselves. And I got to say, my disappointment in the way that everything was handled after Charlie Kirk's murder is truly immeasurable. And it's such a bummer that it went so far off the rails. And this really should never have been something that was so difficult to comprehend, that, like, even if we never found out who murdered Charlie Kirk, even if it was Israel, no matter who it was, what the murder revealed was this incomprehensible vicious, violent, seething hatred of the left towards right-wingers. And no matter who killed Charlie Kirk, and I said this over and over, I don't understand why, again, this had to be so complicated. I don't know if Israel killed Charlie Kirk or not. What I do know is that Charlie Kirk's assassination should have immediately and ruthlessly been used as an excuse to cripple the left in this country. Why wasn't it? And part of me thinks that one of the reasons that this wasn't used to take on the left probably had something to do with the fact that people at the top of our government thought it was Israel and couldn't bring themselves, I guess, to like be like, this was the left and we have to round up the left when they knew otherwise. I don't know if that's the case or not, but you tell me why Kash Patel, Dan Bongino, who was there at the time, and all these people didn't seize on this event, Charlie Kirk's killing, to actually do anything to the left. It only empowered them. They learned that there are no consequences. And going back and watching our coverage from that first week, it just like hit me all over again. Because as much as I remember those early weeks, seeing it again, we'll go to this video now. This is from one day after Charlie Kirk was murdered. And this went on for weeks, folks. But on the first day, first 24 hours after his murder, there were like 300 examples an hour of leftists mocking and celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. And at the time, like, it's almost embarrassing because you go back and you watch the video and it's like everybody on our side was so angry, was so pissed off, and was so like, we were like ready and excited. We were like, okay, this is it. Like, these people are going to pay, these jackasses. And there's this whole giant movement of people exposing these people for making these things and getting them fired from their jobs as they absolutely deserve. You know, this wasn't she called the cops on a black guy because his dog was attacking her. Now she gets fired. This was, wait, you're in charge of children? And you're gleeful that a father was shot in the neck because you saw one out of context clip where he talks about DEI, therefore he deserves to die. We had such an obvious and brilliant opportunity to deal with these people. The only thing that's happened is these people, if they even lost their jobs, are now millionaires because they sued and won, got their jobs reinstated, and have been paid millions of dollars from taxpayers. Out of all of the disappointments of the Trump administration, this might have shot to the top of my list. When I really started thinking about it, when I really went through the videos and was watching how everybody, myself included, were feeling after Charlie's assassination and knowing that none of it happened, nobody was rounded up, no arrests were made, no investigation into the foreknowledge that people displayed by tweeting about the fact that Charlie Kirk would be assassinated that day. The only thing that even remotely happened was after a different event, Antifa was declared a domestic terror organization. Nothing happened from that. So when you think about the midterms coming up, and the failure of the Trump administration to do anything, every time you hear Trump talk about communists or the DSA, just remember that he was handed on a silver platter every excuse he needed to end their participation in our political experiment, and he didn't take it. He did nothing. So I don't want to hear complaints. And I remember that I didn't include the clip in this, but on September 11th, the day after, I was like, look, I'm a constitutionalist, but if Donald Trump came out today and said, we are hereby declaring Antifa illegal, here's 5,000 names I've prescribed, you can get $10,000 for turning one of these people in, I'd be out there with a big net scooping up Antifa, and you wouldn't hear a peep from me about freedom of speech or anything else because they just murdered Charlie Kirk. So we have to do something about this. Again, not that like, see, I want to not be hampered and burdened by the Constitution in our effort to save the Constitution. And the Constitution's number one existential threat at this moment are the legions of psychotic, radicalized leftists deliberately and openly trying to destroy the United States. So we need to do something about that to save the Constitution. We have to stop them from participating in our political process. We had a perfect excuse to do any number of things that would have helped in that regard. We did absolutely none of them. Here's a little compilation from September 11th, just a tiny, tiny little selection, tiny little smattering of just some of the endless outpouring of hatred, vitriol, and death wishes from our friends and neighbors in the Democrat Party. Let's watch. Just think about the mindset of this person.
Sure. You support Charlie Kirk being killed?
Yes, I do.
On the day he died, you're here at a vigil for Charlie Kirk, and you support his death.
Do you support a Nazi?
No, I don't support a Nazi. Charlie Kirk wasn't a Nazi. You support his shooter?
Yep, sure do. It's for
you. I do TikTok for a living. Right, he should be in jail. Like, that guy should, be in jail. Something has to be done to these people. I mean, if nothing else, they at least have to be scared to voice that, right? I'm okay living in a country where these people exist because you can't control people's thoughts, but they should be scared of ever expressing anything like that. That guy's not scared. The guy's advertising it. He's being filmed. He knows he's being filmed. He's in public with his face, and he's saying, yeah, I would have killed Charlie Kirk if I could have. He didn't seem crazy. He didn't seem schizophrenic. He seemed radicalized. He seemed like a Democrat. He seemed like a liberal. Charlie Kirk's just shot in the neck in Utah then.
I don't have to sweeten my delivery to make it work for
Charlie
Todd.
Charlie Kirk got shot. She's dancing.
I mean, who is Todd?
Those are faces. These are their accounts. We have to destroy their lives. Not because they have a different political opinion, because they are openly violent. Obviously. And we could play hours of these videos. They're all over the place. But again, you've got leftist retards on TikTok. That's not breaking news. But what about how widespread this is? What about that you also have congressmen in our government interrupting a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk? So he's asking for a moment of prayer. So they say no.
Let's Wait a minute.
Oh, but it's both sides. Oh, but both sides just really need to tamp down the rhetoric. No, the left is evil and insane and needs to be crushed with the force of the state. Here, again, just more videos. Very normal looking people you'd see on the street. You'd think they're nice. You'd think they're loving and giving. You don't know. You're dealing with a vampire. You're dealing with a hologram. You're dealing with a shapeshifter. They're not human beings. These people don't have souls. These people are worse than animals. Inside their heart is this seething mass of tar, just dripping with putrescence. These people are sick in the head. And it's almost more disturbing how normal they look.
Bitches, let's all join hands and bow our heads in thoughts and prayers for Charlie Kirk. Thoughts and prayers for Charlie Kirk. Thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers.
In the midst of all of this, and just, you don't have to look for it. It's not something we have to uncover. In the midst of this outpouring, this public demonstration of evil, of vile hatred against somebody who never hurt anybody ever, the Democrats are still blaming right-wing rhetoric for the death of Charlie Kirk.
Not everyone took to his words or his rhetoric. You know, at times, they were offensive to specific communities. But with that said, this is not the time to focus on that. We are focused on this tragedy. Speaking of this tragedy, is this a moment for your party to reflect on political violence? Is it a moment for us to think about the responsibility?
Well, let's pause
political
it.
Leaders.
And- it, whoa, whoa, whoa. Is this time for our party to reflect on political violence? Yeah. Oh, we're reflecting on political violence. We're really understanding that it doesn't matter how nicely we treat you people. It doesn't matter how considerate we are. It doesn't matter how normal and loving and generous somebody is. You just killed Charlie Kirk. And you're going to ask us if our party is reflecting on the violent rhetoric? On political violence? Let's go back. Let's see what else this... again, what do you do? What do we do about this? What do we do? I'm not convinced. We're not convincing this. They live in a delusional world of psychopathy. I want freedom of speech. And we can't have it when you get murdered for your speech. So what do we do? So what do we do?
5 o'clock Eastern. Janet.
Wait for it. Go. They just received the news. Cheering.
Go to, have somebody look at the Fox. Trump just posted that Charlie Kirk is dead.
All right, so this is this
did you hear that? That was a live stream of the team. We can pull down. That was a live stream of the TMZ office cheering and clapping and applauding and laughing when the death was announced. Oh, they denied it? It's on video. TMZ denies laughing and cheering. It's on video. Should we play it again? What do you mean they denied it? I can deny wearing a black tie right now. Guess they laughed. They cheered when they heard Charlie Kirk was dead. And they'd laugh and cheer if they heard you were dead or your children were dead or Donald Trump was dead or Alex Jones was dead. These people are showing you exactly who they are. Believe them. Well, what about all the kids that died from school shootings? Oh, well, you know, school shootings happen, so I guess it's fine we killed Charlie Kirk. Are you going to argue with this person? These are not our fellow Americans. They're enemy combatants that happen to live near us.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, no, nothing has changed. And again, the disappointment that none of these people paid any price. Nothing was done to seriously alter the trajectory of American politics. And people might look at that and they might say, well, you know, that's because, you know, people got distracted talking about it being Israel. Yeah, I posted this saying, however you feel about the Charlie Kirk assassination, can we please come together to remember the important thing? We are surrounded by bloodthirsty radicals and they must be crushed. So, like, literally surrounded by the most insane radical psychopaths you've ever seen who will kill you and then demand that you denounce violent rhetoric. We've got to do something about this. And when I say we, of course, I mean the lawful authorities impaneled for this exact explicit purpose. Duh. So it's like, what effect, what power, what influence does Candace Owens have to direct the investigative procedure of the FBI or any local law enforcement or ICE? None, right? If they'd wanted to, they could have seized this opportunity and crushed the left. And anybody speculating about the murder of Charlie Kirk would have had absolutely no impact on that. Now, would that have been easier if, you know, it had been a unified voice of the right wing all calling out at the same time for investigations of Antifa rather than, you know, debating and bickering about who's actually behind it? No. That wouldn't have mattered. It doesn't matter. Why would that matter? Everybody in the country wants the SAVE Act. It's not passing. 95% of the Republican Party wants mass deportations. It's not happening. We all came together to vote for Donald Trump to do certain specific things. Those things have never happened, are not happening. In fact, the opposite of many of those things are happening. So this isn't about, you know, whatever, the people discussing the Charlie Kirk assassination, they're not the ones dictating the actions of the government. That's Donald Trump, Cash Patel, and those people. And this falls firmly in their laps. And if they wanted to ignore this speculation about Israel's involvement and just say this was the left and we're crushing the left, they could have done that. We would have gotten on board. It would have been great. And we could have speculated about Israel's involvement as well, but it doesn't matter because Israel did not force these people to make TikToks celebrating Charlie Kirk's murder. It wasn't Israel cheering in the TMZ room when they heard that Charlie Kirk was dead. Those are the left that represent an existential threat to ourselves and our entire country. And it was the Trump administration that did absolutely nothing to punish them for Charlie Kirk's murder. And by the way, today is July 13th, 2026, and it was, I'm going to say this out, was it 1 year ago? Am I crazy? It's 2 years ago. Two years ago today. So it's 2024, right? It's like, there's no way it was just 1 year ago. No, it was 2 years ago today. Clip number one here. That Donald Trump almost got his head blown off by yet another lone shooter guy that we're not allowed to ask too many questions about. Let's watch.
Our country, probably 20 million people. And you know, that's a little bit old, that chart. That chart's a couple of months old. And if you want to really see something that said, take a look at what happened.
No matter what you think of who did any of these or why, one thing should be abundantly clear. America is under attack. Our people are under attack. The defenders of America are under explicit attack. Here's that famous moment. Seems to go a lot slower than I remember it going originally. But it's absolutely incredible. And folks, we can't ignore any of these threats. Yes, we need to focus on Israel because they're the ones dictating our government policy right now and destroying us from the inside and leading us into a destructive war against Iran that they intend to last forever until, you know, we've been completely exhausted. Yes, we have to worry about the Muslims taking over. I've got like 10 different videos today talking about the political tidal wave that's sweeping in of Muslims getting elected all over the country. Yes, we have to worry about the left, transgender, insane, radical assassins running around. Yes, the DSA is probably the biggest, you know, threat we face. And throughout all of these, the champion that we elected to fight back against all of these forces of destruction has failed to do anything tangible to defeat any of it. He is the one getting us into war in Iran. He is the one allowing Israel and the Jewish diaspora to fully take over America. He is the one who declared Antifa a domestic terror group but never did anything about it. We are failing here.
Took 2 years to do this, our great sponsor. I'm not bitching. It's amazing. They got the highest rated. We published the studies, showed it to you, the big third-party testing firms. The highest quality, gravity-fed filters, cuts out all the thousands of different forever chemicals like atrazine and glyphosate to non-detectable levels, meaning zero, basically. Can't detect it. That's the highest rating. With the most beautiful stainless steel. 3-gallon system. You can get the stand if you want to. A lot of people don't even need the stand. Looks great in your kitchen, great at your business, but the most important thing is it cuts all these toxins out. This is the number one thing you should do for your family, for people, your coworkers. This is no more bottled water, no more, you dump swamp water in this, pool water, whatever, it cuts everything out, and it funds the operation. Everybody needs one of these. This is a home run. I am so impressed because I've been bitching at Bigly Like 2 years ago, we started, hey, we need this, here's the ratings, get this highest thing, I want stainless steel. You can go out and find the company, you know, the manufacturers, go to them with the highest quality, lowest price. They are selling crap. They don't even have the good filters. This isn't even stainless steel, it's plastic. For more than this, get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. Commit to yourself to get the poisons out of the water. It's one of the biggest moves you can make to take control of your life, and it funds this operation. Order it now at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action. And there's a big sale that's going to end Sunday night at midnight, and that is Ultimate Life Force, the ultimate spike protein cardiovascular booster for everybody. That is 50% off. Bunch of other deals that are going to end soon at thealexjonesstore.com. Wide selection of Patriot Apparel and more. And the live feeds of the show are at thealexjonesstore.com as well.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and he's not f***ing leaving. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Just think that there are other countries long before Ireland that started to have difficulties with criminality associated with immigration, and we're not going to be any different, and pretending that that's not a reality, and pretending that that's not something that needs to be addressed, and basically the kind of suicidal empathy that all of our political classes are infected with means that you never see substantive conversations happening about the about this on the TV or on radio in any real way. And I think that I get increasingly annoyed that we seem to have a political class who are willing to martyr a certain amount of Irish women or children to this cause. And I think it's really disturbing that I saw politicians, and I'll get to it, Ivana Bacik talking about crimes against women, and, you know, on these kind of vague brushstrokes about setting up a fund for women who are victims to get money from, and just never, ever, ever really grappling with the real question here, which is when you have large amounts of men coming into Ireland from other countries, countries that have a vastly different culture when it comes to women. When you have that situation, is there any cause for having a conversation about how that might impact the safety of women in Ireland? We had in Ireland many conversations over the years about whether consent should be taught to Irish boys in college, in school, whether people should have the consent classes with their uncle, whether the Irish mammy is to blame for this. And that was all okay. But by God, don't go near, don't touch the subject of men, of Muslim men or men from other countries where the culture is vastly different for women coming to Ireland and having a different approach, and what that impact of that might be on women. And it boils my blood to think of the level of safety that I enjoyed. And I'm not saying that there wasn't problems. Of course there is. But the level of safety I enjoyed as a 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old plus girl going out on nights out in Dublin in the, whatever it was, the early 2000s. And the level of safety that my now 4-year-old daughter will be enjoying 14 years from now. It really, really pisses me off that the likes of Ivana Bacik and the Sock Dems and all these people who enjoyed their suicidal empathy and their woke patting themselves on the back while this was happening will be long gone from political life. And my daughters and the daughters of people who listen to this podcast will be the ones living with the consequences. Say nothing for the women, by the way, who are suffering it today. But I only see this getting worse if we don't actually have the conversations, hard conversations about it. But we won't, because we don't, because that's our way.
I want to say something first, because I can see our friends on the left lining up in the comments to make this point. So, guys, I'll do you a favor and make it for you, which is the first thing that we need to say is that, of course, Irish men commit terrible crimes too.
But like,
I'm not, John.
I'm sick of that shite. We know Irish men commit crimes. We already know that. That's not the silver bullet argument that people think it is. Like, if I lock you into Dublin Zoo tomorrow night and say, there's two lions at large, survive the night, and
and then you get €1 million at the end of it. Does your chances of surviving the night change if I add 10 more lions in? Of course it does. Like, it's absurd. We know we have Irish men, Irish rapists, Irish murderers of women. We all know that. There's nothing we can do about that. What can we do about that? That's a part of the reality of life. Bad men sometimes exist and they do bad things. But you're pretending that there's not a cultural difference and you're pretending that there's not an increased risk when you bring more and more and more men into the country. The Irish men shtick is just, I'm done with it. I'm done with it.
Again, the thing you have to understand is that they know exactly what they're doing. Like, you're just under attack. You're just under attack. Okay? That's all. Like your story about, you know, if there's two lions, isn't that less dangerous than 10 lions? It's like, yeah, and the question you should ask is, who let in the 8 lions? And what was the intention of that? Oh, it was to kill you? Okay, so it's an attack. So you don't need to argue with them about whether or not the lion should be released. You need to kill them.
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time. Uncensored. Unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
Back, folks. This is War Room Live. I think you could sum up a lot of what we're talking about here, as Orrin McIntyre did with this article, this headline. Conservatives are blowing the easiest political win in American history. Young men are abandoning the left in droves. The right could keep them if it stopped treating them like a problem to manage. After Donald Trump's stunning victory in the 2024 election, Democrats had to stop and ask what went wrong. One conclusion from the commentary class was that progressives had a serious man problem, and for once, they were right. Democrats had made contempt for men, especially young white men, central to their message, and that came with a cost. Any white man who remained on the left had to accept that he was either uniquely guilty or expected to participate in his own dispossession. The party even launched a $20 million effort to discover why men were abandoning it, only to arrive at the familiar conclusion that men were simply bad and deserved what they got. Young men who believe the system is organized against them and who have substantial evidence for that belief will organize to defend their interests. What should have created a golden opportunity for the GOP to destroy the loyalty, to secure the loyalty of young men for a generation, instead, conservatives are setting that opportunity on fire. Men's natural role in society is to protect, provide, and lead. Even when women earn good incomes, the data consistently shows they still prefer men who are at least as successful as they are. Women generally do not form families with men who cannot find stable work, buy homes, or attain the status markers that signal competency and security. And it goes on, but again, the headline says it all. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that has been granted to the Republicans on a silver platter. Your enemies are weak and disorganized and appalling and just vicious little gremlins. And all you have to do is be better than them. All you have to do is just provide some basic common sense solutions to some very easily solved problems. They don't have to be dramatic. They don't have to be overwhelming, you know? I'll say it again. All the right needs is a right-wing Merrick Garland, a right-wing Alejandro Mayorkas. We don't need Jeanine Pirro screeching at the top of her lungs that everybody in the media is evil. We don't need, you know, Pete Hegseth doing pull-ups and showing everybody how cool he is. We need professionals who will just enforce the law, get it done, and then move on to the next thing. And let's give a press conference and just go, we're just following the law here, and this is what the law says, that's what we're doing. So, no more questions. And then just, you know, just keep going. Just eliminate the H-1B program. Oh, this program's just an endless source of abuse, and even when it's being used correctly, it's still bad for America. Then we're going to get rid of that program. We're not doing H-1B visas anymore. That program's over. Problem solved. We're going to massively deport people. That's going to lower house prices and open up jobs for young men to get jobs and start building their families. Like, you could just solve these problems. Be good for America. It'd be good for the economy. It'd be good for you personally as a politician. You can run on these things. Any of this stuff is there. It's all, it's just gold lying in the gutter waiting for you to pick it up. What are you doing instead? You're telling Zoomers they're entitled and basically need to get over it. You're saying the economy is better than it's ever been before. Starting wars with Iran. I mean, you're just doing literally nothing to even pretend to be dealing with some of the problems that young men are facing. And then you're screeching and crying about communism because the DSA is growing. It's your fault. It's entirely your fault. And then this, just going back to what we were talking about with Charlie Kirk, it's another great example. And when you start seeing this, you start seeing it everywhere. This is just one example. I saw like three or four just over the weekend. But it's a post from, you know, some group called Starlight, and it says, you know, quote, the Odyssey will flop because it's woke. And basically they're here, go to dot cam here, because you need to see this meme, what they're saying. So, you know, and then it's a gif of, you know, a guy being shot in the head. And as Kangman Lee points out, we can't even disagree about movies without leftoids fantasizing about killing us. And like, yeah, whatever, it's just a meme. You know, I have sort of the same reaction where it's just like, oh, if I have to hear this one more time, I'm going to blow somebody's brains out. Like, okay, fine, it's overblown. But is it really all that overblown, or do they actually basically believe this? I mean, they believe Charlie Kirk deserved to be murdered. What did he ever say about anything? He was the most reasonable, centrist, right-wing dude you could ever imagine. He's like, I'm all for black pilots. I just want them hired on merit. And they're like, you should be shot in the neck in front of a crowd. That's actually who we're dealing with. This is actually the level of extremity that these people embody. They actually do think you deserve to die for literally pointing out reality or for not liking that they are deliberately dismantling your culture and heritage and mythology. You're supposed to accept that. And if you're like, nobody likes this, this isn't going to do well, you should probably be shot in the head. Like, I get it's just a meme. I get that. But you also get that there's a very large element of truth to that. That while we're sitting here going, look at the silly socialists thinking that they can manage a planned economy. They're so silly. Let's roll our eyes and say communism never worked anywhere. Next, you know, it's like, meanwhile, they're sitting there like, let's buy guns and train so we can kill the chuds. One side is taking this seriously. The other side is selling us down the river. We get that, right? We do get that. And things like this, too. Which, maybe this would be a good time to go to some other videos and stories and things that I have. We'll see if we can connect these two things, but I want to get to some other bigger stuff down the line, but this, I think, is another thing you should really, like, think about and ponder on and meditate on for a little while. Nick Shirley uncovers an adult daycare, there's that word, in Flushing, Queens, with 7,000 phantom members. They just claim they have, you know, 8,000 members when they really only have, like, 200. And Brian Beal in response to this, says, the fact that this one dude by himself can walk into any state and find blatant fraud everywhere goes to prove two things. One, the fraud is rampant at an unprecedented scale. And two, the government agencies who are supposed to protect our tax dollars are either completely incompetent or complicit in the fraud. And it is not possible to be this incompetent. They are complicit in the fraud. They like it. They're in favor of it. Hey, that person checked the right boxes, then you give them the money and your job here is done. They love that. Then that some of that money goes back into their coffers, helps them get reelected so they can shut down the investigations into this stuff. Everywhere Nick Shirley goes, he finds thousands of examples without like expertise. Like they're just sitting there. Meanwhile, Joe Biden hired 87,000 IRS agents. None of them picked up any of this. None of them happened to notice the billions and billions and billions of dollars. Why not? The answer on one hand is that they're complicit. On the other hand, it's that these systems are fraud. They are set up to be fraud. They are built in a way deliberately so that there is no way to confirm that the money is actually going where it's supposed to be going. Again, in the private world, this would never fly because people give you money. They expect something in return. And if you just take their money and disappear, they're going to be pissed. You can't do that. In the public world, they just have a blank checkbook. They don't give a damn. So when the IRS goes, huh, this person's got millions of dollars. How'd they get this? And they see, oh, they run a adult daycare and, you know, they get this money from the government. It actually all checks out. Legally, they haven't done anything wrong. You would only see they've done something wrong if you go and investigate, are there actually people in this hospital. The actual massive tens of billions of dollars of fraud is all perfectly valid according to the tax records. They receive the money appropriately. The money's coming from the right location. The only thing that's wrong is that they're not actually doing anything with the money that they're supposed to be doing. And maybe you could find that out by looking at their, you know, transactions and going, there's no way they're buying enough food to feed 8,000 people. Like, okay, maybe you could do that, but that's not really what the IRS does. They just want to make sure that you're paying the percentage that the man demands from your income. And I'm sure these people, you know, pay their income tax and they get away with it scot-free. But everything is like this. Everything is like this. The fraud is rampant absolutely everywhere because our systems are built in order to allow it. And nobody is actually policing it and stopping it from being taken advantage of. And so then you get to a conclusion kind of like this from Unjected on X. The reason why people cannot grasp the anti-vax paradigm is that in order for it to be true, the vax companies, government, media, and regulatory agencies would all have to be so incredibly evil and corrupt that it's beyond human comprehension. Their brains won't allow them to go there. Another way I'd heard this described is, imagine if someone told you that the weatherman on the local news was deliberately lying to you. Wouldn't that kind of sound absurd? It's like, okay, maybe he's wrong sometimes, but like, why would he lie to you? Like, doesn't that kind of say like, no, the weatherman's in on it. The weatherman's lying to you about whether there's going to be rain this afternoon. He knows better, but he's tricking you for his own ends. It's like, why does the weatherman want me to not go to the park? Like, what are you talking about? Kind of sounds absurd. But how do we live in a country that can be grifted for tens of billions of dollars when you will be arrested if you don't, you know, file your W-10 on the $1,500 you made for, you know, grunt work? How is it that every single institution that we have whose entire existence and purpose is to do one particular thing, why is it that they don't do that one thing? They cannot for the life of them do that one thing. How do you get a system where now, I mean, it's pretty much acknowledged Germany just came out and said, actually, nobody should be taking the vaccine, least of all pregnant women, because it has horrible side effects. It's just acknowledged in an open fact now that the virus came from the Wuhan lab and that it was a result of gain of function programming. So the one question is, why does nobody care about this? What the hell? Why does nobody care about this? But the really concerning thing is, how did it happen in the first place? How did we get to a situation where everybody in any position of power at every level all comports the lie when the truth is evident on the face of it. How did we get to this situation, and how do we get away from it? I just saw this video and I had never heard this before, and I was like actually kind of flabbergasted at this. Clip number 22, but I think this explains exactly how they get away with all this stuff. Clip number 22 is a doctor at the hospital where the first COVID patient was said to have been diagnosed in America. He says the man never existed. Let's watch.
First of all, everything in the news was wrong. It was all a lie. So our hospital had the first diagnosed COVID case in America. It was a guy who came back from China, allegedly. It was all a propaganda op.
Given that you think that was a propaganda op, what it makes me think of is the fact that University of Washington is right there. Bill Gates is a big funder of that school. He's a big funder of the health metrics and evaluation group that did all those COVID death predictions for the United States. I mean, do you think that that was all part of that propaganda scheme right there locally?
You know, I could theorize. I can speak to what I saw. The mood was so bad, but it was just ridiculous. So I don't want to hypothesize, you know, kind of off air. I might have my opinions, but what I can testify to was after the first diagnosed COVID case that made all the news, the chief medical officer of the medical group called me down, and we were at odds. We were already at odds about corruption. So I'm in this like basically contentious relationship with this guy, and he calls me down and says, "Hey, did you hear about this COVID guy?" And I'm like, "Not really. Whatever, it's not my world. I'm a trauma surgeon." Like, my thought of viruses and vaccines was like well under 1% of my brain space ever. You know, I knew enough to get A's on my medical school test, but like not something I was naturally interested in.
And by this COVID guy, he was referring to Fauci?
No, the patient who had the first diagnosed COVID.
The first diagnosed COVID patient.
Came from Wuhan, China, and showed up allegedly on our hospital doors. But here's the part that's weird. So the reason the hospital has such a cumbersome name of Providence Regional Medical Center Everett is because it's actually two campuses. And the second campus is just a birthing center and a rehab unit. So allegedly, they housed that guy there.
Wait. They housed the COVID guy who came from Wuhan in the birthing center?
Well, at least at that campus. Now, the CMO told me, "Oh, that's where we have our special negative pressure rooms," which was a bald-faced lie because every ICU room in our hospital, again, is a beautiful hospital. It's the most beautiful hospital I've seen in my life. It was like gorgeous. But every ICU bed was a negative pressure room. And so that's just silly. Additionally, as a trauma surgeon, because you deal with all the bad cases, particularly in the middle of the night, everyone tells you everything. I spoke to zero nurses, zero infectious disease doctors that ever took care of that patient. So maybe allegedly one of the infectious disease doctors who I never met or never talked to about it, kept his mouth shut, treated this guy, but I never heard about it. So none of the pulmonologists, you know, the lung specialists knew about him. No one talked. So the whole thing was silly, but why would you admit a guy to a hospital campus that has no ICU when you're worried about a deadly pandemic? Like, it's just illogical. So just from that, it was ridiculous. And then
this first COVID case, and he's supposedly in a negative air pressure room, which is ridiculous because every ICU has negative air pressure. So it wasn't really a special place for this person who came from Wuhan. And so
with no pulmonologist talked about seeing him, and I knew all the pulmonologists well.
Really? So they sent no pulmonologist to talk to a guy with COVID and probably had COVID pneumonia. And back then they were diagnosing it based on that chest X-ray that showed this quote unquote glass lung syndrome, right?
Right.
So it would have been a pulmonologist who would have gone there.
Yeah. And again, people talk. So I'll just absolutely hold out. There's a theoretical chance this actually happened. It just never happened with any other infectious disease. Like every tuberculosis patient came to the ICU because there were negative pressure rooms. Every other infectious disease we're worried about came to the ICU. So that is just not logical. Hmm. And again, as a trauma surgeon, people tell you things.
Yeah.
They just do. And it just, you become a confessor to a lot of people and they tell you stuff.
Hold on. I've got a weird question. Do you think that patient actually existed, or do they want everybody to think there was a COVID patient there from Wuhan?
Okay. You're asking me to conjecture about things that strain my credibility. I don't know. I just know I knew everybody and no one met the guy.
Yeah. So I think they're all in on it. So I think they're all in on it. Thinking the guy probably didn't even exist in the first place. So yeah, this was a plan. This was an operation. Like, how do you get all these people to go along? Like, this wouldn't make any sense if it all unfolded like they say. You know, again, like, you can't, people don't lie without a reason to lie. They wouldn't have a reason to go along with, you know, knowing that it came from a lab, but lying about it. Well, why did they lie about it? They must have known the actual truth. They must have been a part of the plan. Everything that happened during COVID was the fulfillment of an operation, was a plan being executed to perfection in many cases. So not only, I mean, just absolutely everything they told you about the virus was provably untrue, and we knew it before they even said it. If you'd been listening to us the whole time, you would have known. Then you've got this. Germany now drops all recommendations for COVID jabs for all healthy people under the age of 75, including pregnant women. Germany has just announced highly significant changes to their COVID vaccination recommendations. Pregnant women are no longer recommended to receive the COVID vax during pregnancy, even if fully unvaccinated. Not only pregnant women, anyone under the age of 75 who is healthy is no longer recommended to take a COVID injectable, even if they are fully unvaccinated. The reasons? Greatly reduced severity of infection, widespread community immune resistance through previous infection and or injection. In New Zealand, pregnant women are strongly coerced into taking an mRNA injectable during pregnancy. Germany just decided against this for all healthy pregnant women, even if they previously had zero COVID shots. So yes, they're now admitting that the danger is worse than, or the cure is more dangerous than the disease, essentially. And we've known about all of this the whole time, which was one of the primary reasons they wanted us off the air before they carried off the attack. Seth Dillon recently went after Alex Jones, saying the main reason Alex Jones was held liable was not that he questioned the official narrative. It was that he repeatedly and callously made false claims about specific people. So this is Seth Dillon failing the test, failing the litmus test, proving for everybody he believes lies. None of what he says here is true. He just wants to demonize Alex Jones because he's a bad person. But I'm not going to respond to this. I'm going to instead read from JD at Lost My Hats on X. Nailed this. He fact checks the Israeli first Seth Dillon scumbag. He says, fact check on the Israeli lobbyist. Alex Jones was not held liable for any of his claims. None, not one, because ultimately they couldn't. Not only was their case total bullcrap and unconstitutional, it was almost entirely lies. It was never intended to be successful. The process was intended to be the punishment, not the verdict. The billion-dollar verdicts came after default judgments. Court found Jones in default for discovery violations on BS technicalities, which meant the defamation liability was established by sanction, not by a jury weighing the truth or falsity of his claims. This let plaintiffs, basically the FBI in proxy, skip the actual malice standard established by New York Times versus Sullivan that is supposed to require. His case is nothing but feds versus free speech. We all knew that only 2 years ago it was designed for the chilling effect. Any legitimate constitutional scholar would call that case a miscarriage of justice in which there is no chance he would walk away with a shirt on his back, none. But again, conservatives all knew this in 2024, so what happened? Remember again in August 2018, when all the social media sites coordinated to ban Alex Jones at the same time. At the same time. And I said at the time, they will come for all of us. They did. Within 18 months, me and PNP had been banned from virtually everything, including MailChimp and other services you didn't think of as social media. Anything used to communicate, we were banned from. Why? Was it a necessary prerequisite to COVID? And we all endured the most invasive, draconian censorship regime in Western civilization, don't you remember? You couldn't sneeze politically incorrectly without being banned or put in timeout. Anything related to January 6th, banned. The 2020 election, banned. COVID, banned. Vaccines, banned. By 2021, almost 40% of Americans had been banned, shadow banned, or in some other way censored, including Babylon Bee. And Tucker stood up for Seth Dillon, the most prominent figure in the media, to do so. And not just in social media, it grew to real life. PTA meetings, school boards, town halls. Heck, I was even kicked off of a United flight by a gay flight attendant for a cap that read, Fauci lied. It was quote-unquote health disinformation at 30,000 feet. All of that started when the feds used Alex Jones as a test case in censorship. I'll cover the rest on the other side, as well as the biggest danger we currently face in America, which is, of course, the takeover of our government by hostile foreigners in Israel. But tonight, folks, BOGO ends. BOGO Sups is coming to an end, folks. If you want to get buy one, get one free for methylene blue tincture capsule, or the ultra methylene blue capsules, rather, or buy one, get one free, as well as the creatine, go now to thealexjonesstore.com.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com and talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots, and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us, and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market, and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial, and this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Who took the bomb?
Welcome back, folks. Did we just nuke Iran? RT from RT.com, 3.6 magnitude earthquake strikes northeast Iran amid ongoing U.S. bombing across the country. And I scroll down and see Syrian girl 34 minutes ago breaking. Trump said he used a nuke on Iran with B-2 bombers. Guys, can y'all grab this video? Did he say that? That's crazy. He may have said that while we were on the air, so I'd like to find out what he's saying here. Did we just nuke Iran? That would be really something to behold. I'd be shocked. So yeah, crew, if you can grab that video and let me know when you do, I want to go to that and see what it says. So again, great shout out to JD at Lost My Hats on X, defending Alex Jones with the truth, with what is just obvious and true to anybody actually paying attention, in defense against Seth Dillon, who, like so many other Israeli firsters, were completely against censorship until anti-Semitism became a thing. And now he's not so hardcore about that, actually. He wants to be able to say what he wants to say and believe, but, you know, people who are against him, they're bad. They need to be silenced. And he actually supports, supposedly, I guess, the persecution of Alex Jones. This is really just a, it's really just a condemnation of their own understanding. Like, this isn't a debate where it's like, well, some people think he got what he deserved and other people think it was too harsh. No, no. If you think Alex Jones got what he deserved, it's because you're a fool that believes lies. That's the only possible way you think that what happened to Alex Jones was legitimate is if you're a liar or you believe lies. So let me finish with this really great statement from JD, and then we'll listen to what Trump had to say. So he says, you know, it wasn't just social media that absorbed and started to carry out this censorship regime. It grew to real life, PTA meetings, school boards, town halls. Heck, I was even kicked off a United flight by a gay flight attendant for a cap that read Fauci lied. It was, quote, health disinformation at 30,000 feet. All of that started when the feds used Alex Jones as a test case in censorship. First, the FBI lawsuit by proxy with a corrupt legal process, top down, then social anathema. Then, after strangling him, they came for all of us. Only God and Elon Musk pulled us out of that. America barely survived the attack on our free speech. It was miraculous we came through. Seth Dillon has apparently forgotten what life was like 2018 to 2022 for people who had unapproved opinion. Have you forgotten? I won't, not ever. And this is why we cannot let the Israel lobby build back the censorship culture they desperately need to stop the slide of public opinion in the U.S. It's apparently easier for them to re-implement the fascist thought control regime pre-Elon than to just stop murdering babies in Gaza. Yeah, I'm going to read that line again. I think it's worth it. It's apparently easier for Israel to re-implement the fascist thought control regime that existed in America pre-Elon than it is to just stop murdering babies in Gaza. This is why we cannot, this is why no matter who it is, who they paint as evil, in need of being silenced this week, we have to oppose it. Newsflash, whoever is suggesting free speech lawsuits, formal or informal censorship, or social ostracization for opinions, they're the bad guy. Whether it's reimagining Alex Jones as the devil again, to demanding Megyn Kelly be taken off air for not criticizing Candace soon enough, or going after Sean Ryan's advertisers for interviewing her, trying to get Tucker charged with sedition for criticizing Mike Huckabee, like Rod Martin today, or investigated for the imaginary crime of interviewing Putin, like all journalists used to do at the height of the Cold War, because that's normal. The nonstop attempts to bring back the 2018 to 2022 speech gulag must be resisted at all cost. There is an enemy on the left, but the Israeli lobby is the enemy of the right. They only win if they stop speech, and mark my words, they will die trying. So I think that's very well put. Of course, that is obviously where the number one threat to public opinion, the First Amendment, is coming from right now. And I would once again implore, encourage, beg, in fact, the left wing, who suddenly sees themselves on the receiving end of censorship. Can we understand that the right wing, us here, us at InfoWars, us, the Alex Jones type people in the world, we were right the entire time. And that the censorship that you clamored for and cheered for was always wrong. It was always bad. Just because it got turned towards you doesn't mean it suddenly was a good thing that's become a bad thing. It was always a bad thing. You were just happy to see that bad thing applied to people you don't like. And that's a moral failing on your part. and that you need to understand and embrace the principles, the underlying foundational philosophies that bring about things like free speech, and also to celebrate and love the people that created it in the first place, that actually the solution to all of these problems is Americana, the First Amendment, the Founding Fathers, the Bill of Rights. We need it expanded. We need it actually enforced. You know, I said this about the flock cameras, and I heard Nick Fuentes sort of say something similar to me later. And it was basically, when you see the map of flock cameras going up, the understanding that this is not something you can spot treat. This is not something you can deal with on an independent or individual basis, because they're putting up flock cameras faster than you could ever take them down. Now, does that mean you shouldn't try to take them down? Absolutely not. But what it means is that you're fighting an inevitably losing battle. You'll never actually be able to take down all of the cameras, and every time they put one up, you take it down immediately. That's not how this works. You need a government program to make it illegal. We need a one-size-fits-all, you know, slicing the sword through the Gordian knot kind of solution to all of this. Not, okay, it's up to you. You got to go risk a felony charge and 10 years in prison to tear down a single camera. Meanwhile, there's 10 more that got put up by a contractor earlier today. Like, that's not how we do this. We do this by taking over the institutions and writing laws that say you're not allowed to spy on people persistently. And guess what? Here's the great news. Here's the really good news about all of this. My classic saying is perfectly in fact. All America needs to do to succeed, all we need to do to save ourselves from the brink of destruction, is ruthless enforcement of already existing laws. Lucky for us, we don't need new laws to make flock cameras illegal. We've got the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, and the Sixth Amendment, all of which are violated by the existence of flock cameras. So if we just had a government that actually adhered to the principles they're founded on, nothing else would have to happen. The flock cameras would just be deemed unconstitutional and illegal, and they would no longer be allowed to operate. That's how you solve this problem. Even just going, you know, municipality to municipality, it's a losing battle, and it's a persistent fight that you do not have the resources or time to beat the corporations that are against you. What you can do is get the position in government and just say no. That's all we need to do. We need the government to make this stuff illegal, and every American should be on board with this, left, right, and center. Left-wingers, you don't want these things used to go after anti-Semites, but that's exactly how they're going to be used. So oppose this now, or don't, and suffer the consequences. And people on the right that think, oh, this is a lefty thing, we need these to fight crime. El Salvador didn't need these to fight crime. We didn't have these before the crime wave started. These places where they exist, crime has not gone down by a sizable amount, or even a noticeable one. So these excuses don't make sense. You're just in support of a massive surveillance network, and it's pathetic. All right, let's go to this clip from Donald Trump here, and then we'll talk a little bit more about Flock. But yeah, this was posted by Syrian Girl about 30 minutes ago, where apparently Trump said we used a nuke on Iran. Let's find out.
He's done a good job. If I wasn't around, or if Bibi wasn't around, especially the combination, Israel would not exist today. We wouldn't have hit them with the B-2 bombers. You know, they were going to have a nuclear weapon within 2 weeks. Had I not hit them with a nuclear, within 2 to 4 weeks, they would have had a nuclear weapon. And once they had a nuclear weapon, they would have used it. And you wouldn't even have Israel around. No, Bibi's good.
Is there anyone in Israel better than him to do the job? Is there anyone better than Bibi?
Well, I don't know most of them. I know some of them, obviously, but I don't know most of them.
Yeah, so that sounded like a misspeak. It didn't sound like he said he dropped a nuke. Well, I mean, he did say that, but I think he just meant we hit their nuclear. So I don't think that was an exactly honest portrayal of what he said. However, I am concerned about this supposed earthquake that occurred. That's kind of weird. But, you know, on that note, you know, they're talking about Bibi Netanyahu, and basically Trump is defending Bibi, and the other guy's like, well, is there anybody in Israel that's better? Earlier, I saw another interview from Gavin Newsom. He was asked about Israel being an apartheid state. He also said, well, I mean, Bibi Netanyahu, he's the bad guy here. This is a very obvious trait. Bibi Netanyahu is, at this moment, he's being built up as the sacrificial ram, right? He's being, all of the sins of the state of Israel and the Jewish diaspora are being piled on Bibi. They'll execute him and all their sins will be forgiven. That's what they expect. I hope we're not falling for this. I hope we recognize that Bibi Netanyahu is in fact a moderate when compared to some of his other party members in the Likud party. Let's go to clip number 18 here. This is Glenn Greenwald talking about what's actually going on here with the attempt to blame everything that Israel's done over the last 3 years on Bibi Netanyahu. Let's watch.
This discussion, to illustrate the point I'm making, the very first time I ever heard of WikiLeaks, one of the very first stories I ever wrote about and reported on with WikiLeaks, one of the first times I talked to Julian Assange, was when they published what was called a Red Cell paper from the CIA in 2008. And a Red Cell paper is kind of like the way the CIA internally bats around theories and ideas, and they're classified. And it got leaked to Julian Assange. And the topic of this red cell paper was, increasingly in Europe, there was increasing opposition to involvement in the war in Afghanistan. It'd gone on for 7 years. European countries in NATO, they had invoked Article 5, so they went to Afghanistan to fight with the United States, and they were tired of it. They were losing soldiers, they were spending huge amounts of money. And it was obvious that there was no progress being made. The United States had basically abandoned Afghanistan to go fight a war in Iraq, which many Europeans opposed. And in 2008, two different governments, I think one in Holland, don't recall the other, their governments were voted out of office in large part because of their support for involving that country and their military in the war in Afghanistan. And the CIA was really petrified that this anti-war sentiment in Western Europe in particular was going to grow, and it was going to be untenable for governments to continue to send their troops and their resources to the war in Afghanistan, and the United States are going to be left alone. The best hope for avoiding that, said this memo from the CIA that was classified but leaked to WikiLeaks, was to ensure that Barack Obama wins the 2008 election. Because by doing that, they were going to put, you know, Obama was going to obviously now be the commander in chief of the war in Afghanistan, wouldn't pull out. They knew he wouldn't pull out. He would have to keep fighting it. And they said by swapping the face of the war from this like Texan swaggering evangelical on George W. Bush, whom Europeans hated, felt very kind of alienated from culturally and comportmentally, by swapping him out and putting in Barack Obama, this like erudite, you know, East Coast, sleek, black lawyer, liberal, much more aligned with the sensibilities of Europeans, by making Obama now the face of the Afghanistan war instead of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, it would revitalize support among Europeans for the war in Afghanistan. They wouldn't feel like it was this evil right-wing imperialist project, but instead this kind of humanitarian project, because now Barack Obama, who won the Nobel Peace Prize, let's recall, in his first year in the presidency, that's how much Europe loved him. They gave him the Nobel Peace Prize for nothing. Basically, shortly after he announced an escalation in Afghanistan, they gave him the Peace Prize. In any event, they knew, the CIA did, that would fortify and rejuvenate support for the war in Afghanistan among Europeans, and exactly what happened. You just switch the branding, the face. Sometimes people will be like, hey, it looks different, it looks better. That's what they're hoping for with Netanyahu. That's why Rahm Emanuel is over there, pretending to declare war on Netanyahu, blame everything on Netanyahu. Because they're trying to lay the propagandistic foundation that if you feel hostility toward Israel, it's only because they have a bad leader. And once that bad leader is gone, Israel will transform into something you like again. It's an obvious fraud, but that's the game that's being played. All right.
All right. So I think that was an absolutely brilliant revelation of the fact that not only is this an obvious strategy that one can, you know, speculate about, but this was actually talked about in the CIA as something that they would want to do. So in order to continue the war, the best way to actually keep the war going is to put somebody in office who acts like they're against the war. You can extrapolate this out to all sorts of topics, but I think it's a very pertinent one, especially when it comes to Bibi Netanyahu and the way that he is now being set up to be the fall guy for everything that Israel has done. But remember, what this represents to the world elite and the powers actually beyond and above Benjamin Netanyahu is that he's a horse to be ridden as long as he can, and then you switch horses and you keep going. But, you know, as long as you can do it in a way that doesn't undo the progress you've already made. So they'll use Bibi Netanyahu. They'll use his, you know, position as, you know, king of the Jews, and especially to the American Jews, he's extremely popular, extremely right wing. So they'll use that to sort of progress the takeover of the Republican Party, use the Republicans to pass anti-Semitism laws. They'll get all of that done. They'll check all those boxes. They'll crank the ratchet that far, but it'll never go back the other way. So they'll get rid of Benjamin Netanyahu once he's served his purpose and ended his usefulness, but they won't undo all of the stuff that he did. They won't say, well, he was bad and all this stuff happened under him, so actually now we're releasing the Palestinians and we're giving back the land that we took over and we're removing the settlements from the West Bank and we're taking away the anti-Semitism czars that we put in your kit. No, 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 that never happens. So they'll use Bibi Netanyahu to get to a certain, as far as they possibly can. And once it turns out he's not the right horse to ride, they hop off to the next horse and keep going. But all the stuff they've done in the meantime with Benjamin Netanyahu has all been established and solidified and, you know, made permanent. And so you have stuff like this. New bipartisan bill seeks to outlaw criticism of Israel and Jewish power. It's by Eric Stryker on UNS.com. Last year's defeat of the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act by a coalition of progressive Democrats and patriotic Republicans caught the Jewish community off guard. According to a report by Jewish Insider, Chuck Schumer and his Republican collaborators' attempt to sneak the AAA into the 2025 NDAA was thwarted when a coalition of nationalist podcasters such as Tucker Carlson and various Palestinian sympathetic left-wing groups called attention to its draconian provisions and drew backlash to the bill. Rather than give up, Jewish groups reeling from the defeat have decided to launch a renewed offensive, this time attacking opposition to their Zionist agenda at its root, freedom of speech, especially on social media. In May and June, a bipartisan coalition of 15 House Democrats and House Republicans and 14 Democrats formally sponsored the Jewish American Security Act, a piece of legislation that, if passed, would constitute one of the most sweeping attacks on the First Amendment in American history. The bill enjoys practically universal backing from Jewish nonprofits and Zionist activist groups. The new law presents four major demands: the appointment of a specialized anti-Semitism commissar, as well as several others. But again, you know, it's another advancement in, you know, what we've been pointing out. And this is what they get to do, right? First, they'll do the AAA and they'll try to outlaw anti-Semitism that way. And if that doesn't work, then they just reformulate it and try again, and they'll try again, and they'll try again until they get what they want. This is a problem with the democratic system that we have here. We have to constantly fight back against these attempts to subvert or destroy us rather than have some sort of, I swear, this, it's so necessary, because what do you do? What do you do? They're going to try to pass the AAA, try to get it under the wire, like, oh, let's just put it in the NDA. Hopefully nobody notices. Oh, shoot, they noticed. Okay, take it out. Okay, reformat it. Now it's the Jewish Security Act. Now you're an anti-Semite if you don't support it. And let's see if we can't put this in another big bill. And it's just like endless. You have to constantly defend, constantly defend, constantly defend. And at a certain point, it's like you have to punish these people. It has to cost something to try to do something like this. You can put this bill forward, but if it doesn't pass, you have to go to jail now. I don't know what we do exactly, but they have it rigged. It's set up. There is no countervailing force. There is no organization, network of organizations to compete with the Zionist one to say, we're going to stand up. What that was supposed to be was called the United States government. That was supposed to be the collective will of the American people to oppose the collective will of foreign peoples. Now, our government has been taken over by them, and they have, you know, all of their non-governmental organizations helping to quarterback and, you know, manipulate all of it. But that's the biggest threat to our free speech, obviously. Then you've got, over this weekend, Netanyahu confirming plan to merge U.S. and Israeli militaries. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Sunday confirmed his plan to merge the U.S. and Israeli militaries through an opaque Pentagon contracts immune to political shifts. After claiming he wants U.S. aid to Israel to come to an end over the next 10 years, Fox News' Rachel Campos Duffy surprisingly asked him about the ploy, which I and others have been covering for months now. Will that drawing down of foreign aid over the next 10 years be compensated by the proposal to have merging some sort between our Pentagon and your military? Campos Duffy asked. Yeah, and then Netanyahu responded, I'm calling it from aid to partnership. So it's just absurd. He's like, we don't want your money anymore. And they're like, well, but aren't you like actually going to have direct access to our bank account? And he's like, well, yeah. Okay. So, all right. So we shouldn't do this. So obviously that shouldn't happen, but it is. Joe Kent says this week, the Senate will vote to merge our military's most sensitive and secret capabilities with Israel. This merger is buried within the massive NDAA and they're hoping you won't notice. Merging our military with a foreign country is a treasonous betrayal of our sovereignty. Call your senators and tell them no to vote no on the NDAA until the merger with Israel is taken out. Tell them we want to never support merging our military with a foreign nation. Section 219. The Rules Committee meets Monday night and will decide if our amendment to strip Section 219, merging the U.S. military tech and supply chains with Israel's from the NDAA to get a vote. If they don't let our amendment get a vote, I will vote against their rule. So again, we'll find out later today if Thomas Massey is actually able to defeat the NDAA. Which again, I'll say it. Thomas Massey's actions as congressman has really proven that our system is capable of correction. That even if the executive and the corrupt powers that be, like, nobody wanted the Epstein files to come out, but Thomas Massey forced it. Now, since then, they have once again disobeyed the law, broken the law, not releasing the full Epstein files. So we have to continue that fight. But we actually need our representatives to actually represent us, to actually fight back against this foreign power takeover, especially when you have the flock cameras going in and the anti-Semitism laws being snuck through. We are being set up for a full-fledged prison planet predicated on and justified entirely by so-called quote-unquote anti-Semitism, which is in fact a reasonable and even merciful reaction to the inordinate crimes against humanity ever spilling forth out of Israel, courtesy of American money. So enough is enough. We'll continue that coverage tomorrow because there's still a lot more to say in that regard. And a lot of people finally speaking up about this. I just hope it's not too little too late. But when you take all these seemingly disparate pieces and it's like, oh, they're merging our militaries and they're passing anti-Semitism laws with anti-Semitism envoys that will be in charge of the entire federal government. And they're building a flock network that the federal government is having access to. And they're training ICE with IDF and they're training, you know, local police with the IDF and they're planting these quick reaction forces around the country to deal with the, you know, specter of violence in the future. I think all of these things are all part and parcel of exactly the same program to build up a technological panopticon control grid to enslave the world for the benefit of Israel. So we should stop them from doing that and at the very least not be a party to it and paying for it and sitting back and allowing them to do it without fighting. I hope you can help us do this. The best way to support us is, of course, go to thealexjonesstore.com. You can go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Right now, buy one, get one ends in just a few hours. But for the next few hours, you can get ultramethylene blue capsules absolutely free with your purchase of one bottle. You get another absolutely free with ultimate creatine powder. I may have misinformed you earlier. It's buy one, get one 50% off, so still absolutely massive discount. And I know creatine is one of those things that people stock up on, so now's the time. Stock up on your supplements. Get your incredible shower head filter so you're not bathing in atrazine and all the other poisons that they put into our drinking water. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, let them know who sent you. Keep us on the air and in the fight, and still, to this day, dictating, altering, and shaping the paradigm through which Americans understand the world. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Example on InfoWars, one of his most famous statements was saying that tap water is turning the frogs gay and it'll turn you gay too. First off, gay people are awesome. I don't think that's a problem at all. And secondly, if you notice at the end of that video, he advertises water filters.
Now, you remember for decades I exposed how bad the water supply was, and they'd have David Hogg make fun of me and say it was a scam, and so what if the frogs are gay from the chemicals or trans or become hermaphroditic? Well, that's because their populations collapse and they go extinct, dummy.
He advertises water filters. Interesting.
It's the same thing with humans. Our fertility is being crushed. Our cancer rates are off the charts, and it's because of all the garbage in the food, all the garbage in the water, everything that's happening in our environment, and water is what 70% or more of our bodies are made of. It is so important to do this. It is a no-brainer. Go look at our third-party studies. Go look at our third-party testing, and then go out and try to find a comparable system for less money. Listen to this. Normal retail is $139, but for everybody, it's $97.99. That's 30% off. And for VIP, $69.99. That is a steal at that deal. So take your destiny in your hands. Don't let the globalists bomb you with these hundreds and hundreds, in some areas, thousands of chemicals. Don't let them bomb your children with it. Take action. Fund our information warfare operation against the globalists. Get healthier. Win-win. That is what it's all about. But you've got to take action. You've got to take control of your life. I am so proud of this bad boy. The AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Shower Head System. That's the housing. Just screws on in seconds. No plumbers. Beautiful box. Absolute high quality and a happy little straight frog that you look up at every morning, reminding you that you're not poisoning yourself, your wife, your husband, your children. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexShowStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.